Yes.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Call to order the 64th meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council. My name is John Wingard. I live in Surgeonsville in Hunterdon County.
Jack Schreier, Morris County Freeholder.
Amy Letts, Precipity in Morris County.
Scott Whitehead, Public Member, Morristown.
Janice Kovacs, Town of Clinton, Hunterdon County.
Bill Godder, Mayor of Chester Township.
Tracy Carluccio, Public Representative, Hunterdon County.
So he should waive to say a county freeholder.
I think we have, is anyone on the phone?
No.
And we do have some other members who will be coming shortly. This meeting was advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. All who wish, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have minutes in our packets for the past two meetings, and let's vote on them separately. We have a resolution for the minutes of February 28th.
I'll move that.
Second.
I have to abstain, so you may want to hold.
Well, you don't have to abstain. If you read them and think they look reasonable. Are there any comments or corrections to the minutes of February 28th? Favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? You're welcome to Glenn Petrano and Kurt Alstead. And for the minutes of the meeting of March 6th, the resolution?
Moved.
So second that.
Comments? Corrections? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? A couple things to mention. In our packets and for discussion and possible vote today is a revised meeting schedule. This is based on discussions I've had with Armin and Armin's had with staff to try to work out a reasonable schedule to give us all enough time to consider all the public comments received on the draft, the draft regional master plan. But to also have a finite date for resolving those issues and moving on to voting on a final plan. So that what we've come up with is a proposal that would have us vote on a final plan on July 17th. The meeting schedule you'll see, which we'll discuss shortly, leads up to that with a number of meetings and is based on following essentially the same process we followed last fall to get to the draft regional master plan, where the council will meet essentially as a committee of the whole from now through that period and discuss all the issues that we need to discuss and have informal straw votes on them to get a sense of where the council is, with the final formal vote being July 17th when we vote on a resolution for adopting the plan. As you see in the packets, there's a list from the staff of the issues that they feel need to be addressed in this process. It's a very lengthy list, but there may be others that need to be added. And so what I'd ask is that council members who want to, obviously we can add other issues at any point, but it's going to be most efficient if we add them at the start. So if there are other issues that you think need to be addressed before in the course of that discussion, If you can get them to Eileen before, you know, over the next week or so, that would be most helpful. And my expectation, if this process all makes sense to everybody and is agreeable, is that most of the committees of the council would not be meeting during this period. The TDR committee probably does need to meet, and the budget personnel committees probably need to meet at some point. But otherwise, we would be here. We would be seeing enough of each other as a full council over that time. Second item I want to mention is the Department of Agriculture. As you know, at the last meeting, or before that, I guess, council had asked the staff to look at, in light of the governor's budget proposal that includes doing away with the Department of Agriculture, had asked staff to look at the functions, the impact that would have on the council. And in their packet is a memo from Kim Kaiser with a long list of ways in which the council interacts with the Department of Agriculture, both now and in the future, once the plan is adopted. And there clearly, if all those functions went away, would be a huge impact on the council and the work of the council. My suggestion, but I'd like to make sure this is consistent with what other council members want to do, is that we ask the staff to draw up a resolution for our consideration at the next meeting on this issue, a resolution to the governor and the legislature to say, not that it's our expertise to know how state government should be organized in Trenton, but to say that the Department of Agriculture has provided invaluable service and coordination with the council up till now, and that there are many functions that are now in that department that if there is any organizational change in Trenton, those functions need to be continued, and you know, we need assurance that those are going to be continued in a logical, efficient way so that we can do all the work we're supposed to do that involves agriculture and farming. So I don't know if there are comments on that, but it seems to me it's worth saying because it certainly would have an impact on us and a negative impact if those functions weren't handled, weren't assigned properly in Trenton in a way that they were going to get done. And the other two points, things I want to mention, and then we'll ask other council members' comments. One is ethics. We all have to submit financial disclosure statements by May 15th, and I just urge you all to do that. They are not... They're not fun to do. They don't end up taking all that long to do. And as Kurt made us all aware, the state takes seriously the deadline of getting them done. So
to the penny.
Council Member Alston is not alone.
Right. No, okay.
He's elected not to pay in pennies.
That's it. Okay.
I think that's why we're segregated to the side.
Right. I know it's the reason we all accepted being on this council so that we have the opportunity to fill out these forms. So May 15th deadline, and if you need any assistance doing it, Kim can give you advice. And one of the advice those of us who've been through this year's round of ethics training have heard is that some people put more information on those forms than is necessary, and that you may want to be careful not to do that.
So less is better?
Up to a point, less is better. You've got to figure out the right point. So, yes. Finally, and I hate to take up the council's time with listing all the many awards we're receiving, but the South Branch Watershed Association is honoring the Highlands Council members and staff at their annual dinner tomorrow night, and are presenting us with the Environmental Achievement Award, which is specifically to both the council members and the staff, which I think... including the staff in that is fully appropriate. Including
we can't
the
go.
Right.
Eileen, over conflict.
Eileen and I have gone. We filled out the right form.
But you just can't eat.
Right.
That's right, we can't eat.
Right. But it's...
Or have our names on the roof.
It's a very nice thing, and we all recognize that it doesn't preclude the South Branch Watershed Association from continuing to submit comments on everything we do, but it's a nice...
So somebody likes us.
Right. And I hope they're not too ostracized by those who don't. And I think that's all I have in my report. Do other members have things they'd like to say?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say a few things. I always like to say a few things. The first thing I want to talk about is I have a newsletter from the Highlands Coalition, which is the master organization, and this is their winter 2008 edition. And on page 3, they note under an article headlined written by Wilma Fry, the New Jersey Highlands Regional Master Plan. In the text, it says that the RMP, which they're referring to, that we released on November 19th, contains excellent goals, policies, and objectives that need more specific standards to effectively implement programs. Areas of concern include water supply / quality, natural resources protection and conservation, parens agricultural, zone land use policies. She optimistically notes that the final RMP is expected in late spring, but we've just heard that we're not going to be considering that until July 17th. And I'm pleased that the Highlands Coalition, at least through Wilma's efforts, has recognized what we are doing here, and I thank the Highlands Coalition for that. I spent some time yesterday with Congressman Rodney Frelinghuysen, who was, as you know, the sponsor of the Highlands Stewardship Act, and he talked a little bit. He raised the issue, in fact, about the Highlands itself, and was dismayed that despite the fact that he had worked hard to get the act enacted and passed and signed by the president, that no funding has come through for it. And he deplores that and thinks that that's not a good thing at all because it's antithetical to what he's done by proposing and getting enacted the Highland Stewardship Act. And so he says to reassure everybody here, for me to tell you all, that he's going to keep fighting to try to get that funding from the federal government for willing sellers in the Highlands region, not only in New Jersey, but in Connecticut, New York, and Pennsylvania, where the Highlands extend as well. One freeholder meeting ago, two weeks ago yesterday, I introduced a resolution along the same lines of opposition to the governor's elimination of the Department of Agriculture. And mine was very simple. It was kind of modeled on the one that I believe Chester Township, was it your town did? Which is very simple, a simple objection to the elimination of the department. But my freeholder board, being a much more enthusiastic group, engaged in a spirited debate about that. And one of the members suggested that we cannot simply object, but we need to give the governor some guidance on how to do this. And I was completely consistent with that, so we had one of our attorneys take a look at it, and we did exactly what you were just talking about, which is to describe for the governor the areas where the agriculture department is very beneficial to the state of New Jersey, certainly to our county, and beyond that, to clarify for us, and this was the objective I was seeking, exactly what's going to happen in the course of an elimination of a department like the Department of Ag. Where are those functions going to be handled? Who's going to do that? Who's going to be the point person if we have no Secretary of Agriculture, for example? And in conjunction with what you've suggested that the council do, I would suggest that maybe we should take a look at that resolution that was finally adopted unanimously on the 12th of March by the Morris County Freeholder Board, because the elaboration of it is now fuller and might serve as a little bit of a model for what you're planning to do as well. What I have here in front of me is a small portion of the comments that I received by mail from people who are laboring to try to help the council do the Highlands Act in what they believe is the right way. And interestingly, there's a template on the Environmental Federation, New Jersey Environmental Federation website, which is a letter to the governor, a model document, that is followed out the window, so they say, in all of these correspondence. They are literally reiterations of that governor's letter, that sample governor's letter, almost word for word, a few tweaks from members from time to time, from writers. But every one of those goes into my file. I have read every single one. Well, not every single one of them. The ones that came yesterday, I haven't read yet. I am going to attempt to respond to all of them. I have responded to many so far. They are addressed to me. And I presume that other members have also gotten them, especially freeholders. Have you, Tahitian?
No.
Or am I just the lucky one here? Okay, well, I'm being hammered pretty hard then.
You're a hard worker.
And I intend to respond to all of those. I think that's important to let people know, as I've heard from those to whom I have responded, that they are being comments are being read and heard and listened to, whether they are consistent with what my decisions will be is something else again. I'm entitled to and have an obligation to make up my own mind on these issues. But I think it's excellent that people are weighing in on this issue and there's so much activity around it. And that's the point of my bringing these in to show you. I didn't weigh this, but it's pretty heavy. And there's about, I calculated, in postage stamps, there's over $50 worth of postage here. It goes to the U.S. Postal Service. So I'm not laughing at this. This is serious business. And I'm pleased at these comments. I wish they were more substantive, rather, than simply reiterations of the model document that the New Jersey Environmental Federation has proposed. Which brings me to another matter. I recused voluntarily on two issues that came up at the last meeting. And I did that because of the circumstances that were brought to my attention, as I said then, 24 hours or less before we had that meeting. And yet there was uncertainty surrounding whether or not I should recuse. I'm sorry you weren't here. You were down in a sunny place enjoying yourself. We found out later that not only was it not necessary for me to recuse, but I did it in the spirit that I had noted when I did so, which is to remove any perception of taint from the decisions that were going to be made by the council. But that if I should have done that, then other members should have done that as well, including some who did not. And so I announce now that I will no longer recuse myself from any issue unless I am ordered by the chairman to do so. I think it was extremist for people who have complained about the council playing politics, to play politics with that issue. And I think it's an abhorrent process, and I will not be a party to it any longer. I'm ordered to recuse because of something that is so blatantly evident that there might be a conflict. I will certainly do so. But in the absence of that, I will stay here and do my duty and fulfill my obligation. There was also news reports. There were also news reports after the meeting. Obviously, I didn't attend the balance of the meeting. That at least one council member suggested, and there may have been others, that the problem lies with the fact that elected officials are sitting on the council. And because of that, that elected officials are subject to those kinds of potential conflicts. And the answer then is to remove elected officials from the Highlands Council and replace them with, quote, public, unquote, members. I can think of no more public member than someone who has been elected by the public to represent the public. I will not go on.
Okay. Thank you. Eric Peterson has joined us. Welcome. And is somebody on the phone?
Debbie's on the phone.
Hi. Welcome. I just want to respond to one thing raised by Jack's comments and the letters received. I think the council, by issuing the plan, the draft plan, when we did, helped save people postage since the rates are about to go up. But this question has come up in a couple of ways of individual council members are, we all know people and are we may receive letters, as Jack has, or comments from people who are concerned about the plan or have comments and want to talk to us and meet with us. And my feeling is that's completely appropriate, that anyone on the council feel comfortable talking to anyone in the public who has comments or concerns about any work of the council. Where the line is in terms of then and how you respond to that, and in terms of not representing what the council is going to do, or you know, or making any commitments in those discussions to move forward one way or another, so that we can continue to work as a group to continue to grapple with the issues we have been grappling with. I don't think that's a change in the way any of us have been operating, but I just want to mention it because it has come up a couple of different ways.
Can I elaborate on that just a minute? I've heard about that, and you know, if we are approached, for example, by an applicant, we are required to refer the applicant to a member of the staff. People who have a highly focused, laser-like agenda that may be inconsistent with the broader agenda that the Highlands Council members have to deal with, I think can do that. I have no objection, I guess, to freedom of speech on that issue, but I think it would be incumbent on council members subsequently to advise the staff and the chair that such conversations had taken place, and that whatever occurred during those conversations should be made known to the rest of the council.
I think that's a good idea, because I mean, I think it also helps make sure that the public comments get known by more of us and have that benefit of spreading.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I have one concern about it, and that is that, you know, we said that the public comment period is closed. I'm concerned that by us meeting with, you know, different groups individually, that we're kind of, in a way, extending that comment period for some. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but that's how it seems to me. So it's something that I'm wrestling with myself.
I don't know. I mean, the notion of any of us being approached in any setting by people who say, I want to talk to you about the Highlands Plan, and us saying, I'm sorry, the comment period is closed, we can't talk to you, seems not good. I don't know. It doesn't seem to me that represents any problem or conflict. I mean, people will express their opinions here at council meetings or in other places, and if we hear them, that makes us a little more aware of what other people think.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
And much like Jack, I think that as an elected official, you meet and talk and greet with lots of different folks. I, for one, have no intention of limiting my discussion with any group that wants to talk to me on any subject. So, you know, I think it's absurd.
Yeah. I think the one line in there is specific permit applications.
Well, I think permit applications, he's absolutely correct. Right? A group wants to talk to me about some issue about the house, send me a letter, make an appointment, fine. Doesn't mean I'm going to change my mind. It doesn't mean I'm going to promise them anything. But certainly listen to a constituent group, particularly if it affects people that you represent as an elected official. I think you have an obligation.
I think that's okay, as long as you let the rest of us know what you've heard, so that we can share that with you. I think that private conversations about that should be carefully laid out.
Jack, I don't know how you do that. I mean, this morning I was.
It would be up to you.
This morning I was in a meeting that they talked about Cohen and how it affects the Highlands. I don't know that I could encapsulate everything that took place at the meeting.
Is that a public meeting?
Yeah.
That's different. We're talking about private conversations.
Mr. Chairman, are you saying, or is Jack, are you saying that every time we have a conversation with somebody about issues involved with the RMP, we're supposed to report back?
I'm talking about a lobbying effort.
Well, I mean, I think, then what's the definition of lobbying effort? A private, you said private conversation, a private meeting of an organization, or a private conversation with somebody who you're discussing things with, we're supposed to come back and make a report to the council?
No, I think that if you have a private conversation with somebody who represents an organization, who has something to tell you, and an axe to grind, that it would be incumbent upon you to share that with the rest of the council members, so that we can all be equally informed. Otherwise, you have information that we don't have.
Well, I mean, I think this is really, I'd like to hear from our attorney on this, because I think you're getting into some.
This is the reverse side of the coin that affected me and Eric 2 weeks ago.
Well, I don't think we should degenerate into tit for tat.
Well, that's
no,
not
I think it's well.
It's not tit for tat at all.
I think we may be creating a problem where there isn't one. I mean, I think we've all been doing this for several years in this setting, and many of us in other settings, and we all have, you know, good ethical standards of how we operate, and as a group, I think we've operated very well, and we all bring in different pieces of information that we have from various parts of our life, and I don't. I don't see it as a problem. I mean, I think it's something to be sensitive to in terms of, you know, how people talk to you, when you talk to them, but I think we all know basically how to do that.
I mean, given that you're from our attorney, there is a
All so he's going back to Florida.
All I would add is that there is a major distinction between a quasi-legislative decision-making, which is what this is, doing a plan, versus, as Jack alluded to, quasi-judicial, where you're hearing an application. I think we have to keep that in mind. But to the extent you're doing a legislative action, we all know that the legislature gets lobbied when they take legislative activities. The one note of caution I would say is that the public comment period is closed, and no expectation should be made that comments that we hear from now on are going to be made a part of that public record. But as the chairman alluded to, we're going to be hearing public comment on all the decisions between now and July 17th, so there will be additional information that comes out. I'm not going to express an opinion of whether the council should report out all private conversations.
Well, you did say, Tom, public comment. We'll be receiving public comment. I think that's something other than what we were talking about here, but I agree with you.
Yeah, and the only question that came up before was if we are going to be having meetings with various groups, I think it's fair to say that as Mr. Carter alluded to, you know, he's open to hear from anyone.
I would like to go on the record that I'm open to hearing from anyone too, and I think all of our council members have always acted that way, and I think it would be ridiculously cumbersome to be reporting back about every conversation we have with the public.
Okay. And the other thing I left out in terms of talking about the schedule for the meetings, and I think we'll get to this too, is that if we do follow the schedule and adopt the plan on July 17th, then one thing that will I was just adding to this resolution is that we have a subsequent conference call meeting a week later to consider the minutes of the meeting of July 17th, so that we could approve the minutes of that meeting, so that then the governor's time clock could start to consider whether or not he wants to approve the minutes of that plan. So when we get to that would be added to that. Other council members have other. Topics of no controversy that are
we wouldn't dare.
Okay, well then we'll turn to the executive director's report. Eileen.
Good morning and thank you. Just to start off, I want to remind members as well that as well as filling out those financial disclosure forms, you're also obligated to go through your training. Those of you that attended the training here, you're done, so to speak, for this year. Those of you that didn't, the chairman is requesting that the online training be finished by April 15th. So if you need guidance, Kim will guide you as to how to go about doing that. But so that we all stay in line with the New Jersey Ethics Commission, we'd ask that you do that. The other thing is that you had asked us to prepare a letter to the Ethics Commission on various issues, and I did want to let you know that Kim has prepared a draft for your consideration. We'll get that out to you and make changes or whatever you want so that we can get that down to the Ethics Commission, because we certainly need clarity on some issues that have come up more recently. On status of public comments and next steps, I did let all the council members know, and I want the public to know as well, that the comments are now available, all of the comments, on our website. If you go to the home page of the website, there on the menu to the right, on the right-hand side of that page, there's also another notification underneath the picture that you can click there as well. We've tried to make it so that it can't be missed. And then if you went in to look at the final draft, you'd find them there as well. So those are the comments on the 2007 final draft. You can sort through them, looking at the name of the person who submitted those comments or who gave testimony at the public hearings. You can search them under the organizations. You can search them under the issues. So it's easy to sort of work your way through it, depending on what you're particularly interested in looking at a particular moment in time. But they're available for the public and for council members. We did finish the letter to COA regarding third round regulations, taking input from council members. Thank you for that. The finished letter was sent down to meet the deadline of March 22nd. We also have furnished you in your packet today with the 2007 annual report in its draft form. That is due on Monday, actually. So if everybody's pleased with that, we worked, obviously, with the chairman on the opening letter. And then the rest of it, the financial report was given also to Mr. Cogger as our chair and chair of the budget committee and also as our treasurer.
So let me just add, I mean, the annual report looks fairly fine here because of the color, but it is a draft, so you have a day to get comments in.
Okay, and we've already got one Emma missing. Debbie is not an Ember, she is a member.
Okay.
I will correct that. I don't know if Debbie's still on the phone.
Debbie, are you still on the phone?
I think she flamed out.
Okay.
Oh, that was bad.
That was quick.
We will send it to Debbie as well because I didn't actually get the chance to send it out to you electronically. I will make sure that Debbie and other members of the council that aren't here.
It's Liz and Cameron.
Liz, Tim and Debbie, thank you. We'll make sure we send it out to them as well. And if anybody catches any other embers, let us know.
Madam Director, I'm also one in if you're going to make changes.
Certainly, and I apologize, Mr. Petrano. I presume it's in the Glen. Okay, we'll try to get that right. Moving on, the Municipal and County Outreach, just to let you know what we've been doing. March 8th, we did a presentation at the New Jersey Land Trust rally on the Regional Master Plan. March 10th, an informational meeting with Mountain Lakes. March 12th, we had a discussion with Mount Olive and the Office of Smart Growth. We were represented at that meeting at the request of Mount Olive to discuss the Regional Master Plan and the State Plan. March 12th, a presentation to Mendham Borough. March 18th, a presentation to Chester Township, Mayor Bill Cogger's group. March 19th, we had a meeting here in the office with Hampton Borough Mayor to look at some exemption issues and some helping with some COA issues. And on March 25th, a meeting with Randolph Township, again, an informational meeting. Those meetings continue to go very well. We find them very good at getting a relationship, establishing a relationship with the different townships. We had a meeting March 25th with Somerset County to discuss wastewater management planning. Tomorrow, Tom and I will be going to do a presentation with ICL, the Institute of Continuing Legal Education. And April 4th, we have our regularly scheduled county planners meeting. So that brings you up to date on where we've been and where we're going. Also, April 2nd, New Jersey County Transportation Association is having a transportation conference in Atlantic City, and we'll be represented there during the presentation on planning impacts of the state plan, Pinelands and Highlands on transportation projects. At this point, what we wanted to do was go over with you an overview of the plan development issues, and this gets to what the chairman was discussing when he talked about timing, getting a schedule together to meet that July 17th date, or to make sure that we could cover these issues. So I've got a PowerPoint that we will share with the public as well, so that they can follow this and so that they can make notes and look at the issues that we're going to be covering. I do want to say that some of these issues aren't actually necessary to be in the plan, but they're ongoing work that we will continue to do because it is important that we move those issues forward as well. So some are specifically necessary to be included in the Regional Master Plan, others aren't, and I'll explain that as we go through it. Also to let you know that there are many other minor issues. Now, when I say minor, I mean that they didn't rise to the level of getting onto this issues document, but there are issues of clarity, issues of consistency of language, things of that nature. We will be going through the plan from beginning to end to correct, as we've got some comments that talk about using one word in one place and a word that has a slightly different meaning, discussing the same matter elsewhere. We will be taking care of all of those issues as well. When it comes to issues of editing, of using that instead of which, we will have professional editing services as part of our contract with AKRF, who will be assisting us on final production. And as part of that contract, we have a professional editor. So I encourage you to not spend your time on those kind of edits. And we have actually explained to them that they will be spelling Greyfields with an A. So just in case they decided to try to edit that.
Mimi's not a lawyer. I'm not a professional. But thank you anyway.
We should take council considerations they take priority over even editing. Okay, now to move then to the issues for council discussion, they will be on the board behind you. It's slow, but it's now moving with great speed. Thank you. Okay, the first issue that we draw to your attention that we'll need some work on is the cluster development. Now, these issues are not only raised from the public comment, but they've been raised by council members as well. Cluster development is a case in point. More detail and clarity is needed for cluster development goals, policies and objectives. Concerns have been raised regarding the potential for clusters on septic systems in agricultural areas to increase pollutant loadings. So we'll be looking at that issue, bringing findings and recommendations to you, and certainly providing greater clarity. The regional master plan should clearly state that priorities are preservation first, that's either fee simple, and easements and the use of TDR, and then clustering in order to protect both ag uses and environmental resources. Clarity is also needed regarding the prohibitions on new sewerage in the preservation area for clusters. We have been very clear on that, with clarity given by the council members as well, that any extension of sewers into the preservation area is only as the Act mandates. So we're going to make sure that that is absolutely clear. And in relation to clustering as well. When clustering, the RMP should be clear about what resources have priority for protection. It's important to make sure that we know where the priorities lie. The RMP should address the issue of impervious surfaces caused by clustering and the need for integrated management of any new agricultural impervious surface. Again, these were concerns raised over when you hit that 3% and that 9%. And taking all of that into consideration, so we'll do some further work on that issue for you. Clarity as to the development capacity of clusters in the various zones and subzones. Again, the comments received spoke to the fact that people didn't understand how the cluster provisions applied to the different zones and subzones, so we'll make sure we provide that. As we go through these issues, I also want to let you know that we're not starting the work now on all of these issues. We've comments from you and comments from the public, so we've been working on many of these issues basically since the release of the final draft plan. So just to let you know, though, that as we move forward and we have the aggressive schedule that we've set forth once again, we'll give you a closer indication as we come to each meeting to what issues will be discussed at the meetings.
Let me just get clarity for the process here. So as you go through all these issues now, if any of us feel there are issues within, some issues within these issues missing or in need of different language, we should get that to you in writing. I mean, we're not going to get into discussing all these issues right now. And then the next step is that you, the staff, would come back to the council with something like an issue paper on each of these issues that would discuss these and conclude with recommendations of what changes you propose making in the final plan based on this, and then we discuss that at a subsequent meeting.
Correct, and it's very similar to the process, as you said, that we did for the November 19th release. Also to note that this PowerPoint is not exhaustive. There's more information in a draft memo that I've given to you, and there's more information. So there are things such as clarity and language that aren't really governing this. We're trying to hit the major concerns that we've heard from members and from the public. But absolutely, if there's something that you think is lacking, please let us know. And the sooner the better, so that we can address it and be ready for these subsequent meetings to meet all your needs.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I have a question related to that. In the issues paper that we all got,
you, for all of these, have a recommendations section, which is not necessarily in the PowerPoint, I guess. But so you're already thinking about how to remedy this. And in some cases, you're saying, well, we need to change, you know, this or that in the plan. If we have thoughts about how to remedy it, we should also send those on to you.
Yes. Okay. Very helpful. Thank you. The second issue is the confidential list of priority parcels for agricultural and open space preservation. We're actually going to get into the meat of that matter today. So just very quickly going over it, we're required to do this. It's required to be confidential. Those lists are required to go to SADC and Green Acres. But rather than belabor the point now, we'll move on because we actually have a separate PowerPoint on that and we'll present that methodology to you today. The next section, the next issues, there's two of them. These are designation procedures. The first one is for scenic resources inventory. This is something that does not have to actually be, the designation procedures do not have to be in the plan. There will obviously be some talk of them, but and we've had conversations with the council before, and we've even released these designation procedures out for public comment, which we will be doing again. We developed that draft procedure, and it was released for public comments in September 2007. And the comments called for substantive changes and gave us many ideas. Modifications will be gauged against the intent and goals of the Act, because that's what's important to us. And an updated draft of the document will be prepared for review by the Council after we've released for public comment. And that was agreed at a previous meeting. And the second part of that are the designation procedures for redevelopment sites designation. And similarly, as to the other one, we did release these for public comment. And separate, but part of those, was the methodology for calculation of impervious surface. We are reviewing those comments, making changes, and again, will be released for public comment and brought back to the Council for your review. Again, these do not have to be within the actual master plan, but we know that it's important to keep these matters moving forward. The housing program. The housing program needs additional clarity and depth in the housing discussion, metrics and objectives to reach a regional balance of housing opportunities located in economically mixed communities that are accessible to employment and services. So this gets to all the issues of the full range of housing. It's not just the affordable, but the full range of mixed range housing that should be available. So we'll have greater clarification in that program.
Is there going to be any conflict with COA's requirements as we do this?
The constitutional obligations will be upheld. If we're talking about if there would be conflict with the numbers that have been proposed by COA, yes, that is possible, because the regional master plan will affect what towns, if for towns that have to conform, it will obviously affect them. For towns that have the option to conform, they then will have most likely a more limited opportunity for development because of the necessarily protective nature of our plan. However, as we've said before, and I think it always bears repetition, COA is required to consider the regional master plan for all 88 municipalities for its third round obligations. The land preservation program. The Highlands Council is going to collaborate with other state agencies to identify non-traditional methods for preservation. Again, we've received comments on this. So we want to explore the idea of things like conservation tax credits and other tax-based techniques used by other states. So this is just an opportunity to expand on the tools that can be used to assist landowners in preservation, given that there's a limit to the amount of funding, even though we look forward to more, as Mr. Shire pointed out. Plan conformance and project review standards. Certainly, the regional master plan can be improved with additional clarity regarding the hierarchy among resource protection and smart growth conformance standards based on the minimal practical use policy. So we need to look, when we're looking at project review, we need to keep an eye on the minimal practical use. So therefore, it's necessary to make sure that there are certain resources that must be protected, and that there is a hierarchy within those so that we allow for that minimum practical use. The policy should protect resources for which mitigation is very difficult or impossible over resources where mitigation is easier.
Again, this is in response to comments received. And the new language should be drafted clarifying the hierarchy by which goals, policies, and objectives, certain ones take precedence over others for the purposes of resource protection and smart growth. Web-based guidance system. A lot of comments we've received speak about the need to have easy access to information so that we can share that information with applicants, with the public, with other agencies. So what we're doing is preparing a framework for a web-based guidance system, which will guide local government, it will support permit application reviews, respond to stakeholder needs for consistent and clear information in a very public fashion regarding the regional master plan and the policies and procedures to be enforced. So we're working on that guidance system now. For the Carbonate Rock area, these are all different programs, guidelines for reviewing development projects within the Carbonate Rock area. Again, comments received spoke to the need to provide guidance so that public health and safety is protected because of the very nature of limestone areas, and also to avoid or mitigate hazards through site design.
Question, Mr. Chairman. Eileen, there's a few places here where you mention guidance manuals that you'll be using, like in this one, and then there's some others. Can we get copies of those, or are they available on our website? Or
those are the we're working on those currently.
Okay. No, I mean ones that are in place already that you are using as models, like the North Jersey Resource Conservation and Development.
Yes.
Do you have them?
We don't have them on the web, but we will make them available to you.
Okay. There's a few places here where you are using.
Referring to ones that we're already using. Yes. Okay. Refer to model ordinances later on as well.
So yes. Model ordinances are another one that you mentioned.
Right. So you want? Yeah. Absolutely. True.
That would be great. Thank you.
Lake management areas, similarly, I mean, there's a trend through these. We can get it, we knew it when we were, you know, doing the regional, the draft, that we had to provide. There are a number of standards already within the plan. There are a number of others that need to be developed to provide that guidance. And what we hear from towns as we talk to them as well is, as they're considering conformance, that they want to have these, they want to know what they're considering. They want to know what those standards are. So likewise, for the lake management area, we want to develop guidelines that will be used to review development projects within those areas. And that will give greater guidance to municipalities for what those lake management areas will be used for. Low impact development and best management practices. Again, developing guidance so that people know what we're talking about when we're talking about these kind of processes and planning tools. Smart growth, community design. Again, developing standards for municipal conformance and guidance so that they know what we're talking about when we talk about smart growth and community design elements. Now getting into the model ordinances. The Highlands Act requires the council to provide model ordinances to guide municipalities in their efforts at planned conformance. As we go around talking to towns as well, we are aware that many towns have very good ordinances on the books, which perhaps will become models for us. We've been very clear in the development of the Regional Master Plan that if a town has an ordinance in place that is equal to or superior than what we're proposing, of course they would be able to use that. And as I say, they might become models for us. So we expect to continually build on the model ordinances that we will provide. But the factor that we find most important for writing ordinances is the standards that go into those ordinances, because you can build ordinances, but they must be built on particular standards. So we want to develop the key provisions of a good ordinance and identify those existing model or sample ordinances. But developing those standards for municipal plan conformance for each of the components of plan conformance, and those would be dropped into those ordinances. And so then on the right side of the screen, you see the model ordinances will govern all of these, including but not limited to forests, highlands, open waters, steep slopes, critical habitat, karst topography, lake management areas, wellhead protection, water availability, water utilities, septic system densities and management, historic and cultural preservation, cluster development, and TDR.
Some of those standards will come out of the ordinances that you're going to be reviewing.
Yes.
So they may already exist, you just have to identify them, pull them out, and
right.
Quantify them.
And what we're looking for is consistency across the area, because as you're saying, some of these towns are ahead. They've already got those ordinances or superior ones in existence. What we want to make sure then is that other towns, as they're looking at, they can examine this and say, basically, and we'll talk about it later on, have a checklist, and they can look at it and say, okay, we're going to be required to do this. Then they have to examine the standards to see if they're consistent with them or superior. They can check it off and say, we're good on that. Naturally, staff here would verify that. But in other cases, they may say, well, this is something we haven't done. Maybe it's limestone ordinance. Some towns may not have done them, or their standards may not be equal to or superior to that. So this is going to give them clear guidance.
Yes, and since sometimes these ordinances are challenged legally, mm-hmm. we're going to build into the process support for the ordinances, so the municipalities can rest on that as well.
Yes, and that's important because, and this again, municipalities, when we go out to these informational meetings, are very interested in the legal shield that is provided to them. So it's critical that the ordinances are consistent, as you say, so that legal shield can then be provided to these towns, because their master plans, once conformed, and all their ensuing land use ordinances and decisions will have that protection.
Any? What is the origin of the bullet points? Is that, did we develop that through our staff, or is that?
It's taken from the plan, looking at the different elements that we've covered in the plan and saying that these are, and from the comments received, that these are issues that need to be addressed and where we need to have ordinances that govern them.
Ag and right to farm, is that worthy of a bullet point?
It has a whole section coming up.
It does, and right to farm.
So you're suggesting that we're going to have a separate section that identifies ordinance suggestions for the municipalities, separate from this?
This governs the model ordinances, but there are some issues like right to farm is already a mandatory component of plan conformance. Any town that comes in to do plan conformance is mandated to have a right to farm ordinance. So,
I think we would develop a model right to farm act ordinance. Already, our right to farm act ordinance is out there. I think we'll look to improve that.
If you want, I mean, we can add it to this, but it's definitely included. It's just some things are mentioned in other areas, but I hear you. Water quality management plan reviews. Again, just to prepare an updated draft for procedures for Highlands WQMP reviews. We've gotten some comments and some additional information that we can add to that, some from state agencies as well, so that we can make sure that there's consistency and sufficient detail in the approach to the many different types of projects. I think you've all found to date that every time we do a WQMP, it brings a new wrinkle to the process.
In that connection, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that we consider something that has been brought up before, and I know you have it on record someplace, that there be levels of consistency. Right now, we have what some have referred to as a bright line, but which does not allow for levels of consistency, whether a project or a plan amendment, in this case, is substantially consistent or so far off consistency that there's absolutely no consideration given to it. I think that might be and I reiterate that because I know you have it on record, I think that would be something that would be very important to consider. It would not affect the bright line, but it would certainly allow some understanding of the level of consistency with the RMP as we go forward and get toward adoption.
Right, definitely, Mr. Schreier. Also, some of the comments earlier about the hierarchy of resources did get to that issue as well, but it folds into this too.
Okay.
Thank you. Transportation and capital project reviews and growth-inducing projects. Council needs to revise goals, policies, and objectives, clarifying transportation planning process within the Highlands region and the role of the New Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and county planning agencies. Again, we have been having meetings on these issues. We met with NJTPA recently. Develop procedures and criteria for capital project review. And the guidance should include the council's review process in support of regional master plan policies, review of pending versus proposed capital projects, clarification regarding immediate versus longer term goals, and approach for interagency coordination. And what we hope to bring to you at the next meeting will be a proposal to work with the Voorhees Transportation Center, which will assist us with some of these elements. And we're going to bring that to you at the April 10th meeting. We've met with them as well to talk over these kinds of issues, and because they have a specific type of expertise that they can assist us with.
Is the goal, policy, and objective of this section to specifically make recommendations for transportation projects in the Highlands region? Is that our aim?
That is part of it, yes.
Because, you know, I've always maintained that it's one of the mandates in the Act, and it's one that I always feel we fall short of, because I don't feel that we are identifying specific projects, even though we're told we have to identify specific projects. And I would certainly feel much more comfortable if we adopt a plan on July 17th that has at least one transportation project that we endorse.
Duly noted, Mr. Olstead, and we've met with, that was part of the conversation with the New Jersey Transportation Planning Authority, and it's part of the work we anticipate doing with Voorhees Transportation Center, and we anticipate having one at least, seeing as you kindly gave us that option, a project that we would promote within the plan.
The Chester Light Rail.
Chester Light Rail?
Well.
Plan Performance Technical Procedural Guidelines. Staff are completing the Technical Procedural Guidelines, which include a matrix, and this was, again, requested by council members, a matrix for each of the areas of plan performance. What we also wanted to do here is to make it very clear to towns, given that this is going to be a long working process with municipalities, you don't do master planning or review of master plans in a matter of months. You're all aware of that. So we want to make sure that we give them clear guidance, that we have immediate mandatory items, long-term mandatory items, and discretionary elements as well. So we want to we're actually completing that, designing that matrix, so that there's clear guidance, that there's clarity of what they have to do and when they have to do it. And this, again, is what we're trying to do, is design this, recognizing our obligation under the Act to do conformance for all towns with lands within the preservation area 9 to 15 months after the adoption of the plan, presuming that the 9 months are to assist us in getting ready to do this work, just as when you do master planning, you then move on to implementation. But we anticipate, you know, starting before the 9 months, because we know 9 to 15 months isn't a big enough window for us. But we're trying to design this matrix in a way that we can keep moving forward with towns. They can be in conformance and then have an action plan, because the planning will be ongoing.
Mr. Chairman, a question on that. How are these going to be chosen? What's mandatory, what's long-term mandatory, and what's discretionary?
The discretionary are ones that are already within the plan, where we say that we will encourage towns to do certain things when we know we can't mandate. So those will be the discretionary. They're already things that you've looked at in the plan, and more may come up as we do all of this work.
Right.
But you will be, you know, working and making sure that the discretionary elements are what you intend to be discretionary.
In terms of mandatory and long-term mandatory, for instance, we're going to be, as we go forward in the coming weeks, discussing.
Yes, we're going to give you that matrix, and you can look at it, and if you think that something belongs somewhere else,
we will be dictating. We can discuss it. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I would just like to suggest that we call this guidelines, and that as such that they remain guidelines, and that they be as succinct and brief as possible. You know, I'm getting concerned that municipalities, with their financial crunches now, and I know that we have, you know, these awards and all for them for financial help to develop these plans. I'm concerned that they're not going to be able to dedicate the resources to this to get it done. So, you know, it's going. You know, as I talk to some of the towns, they're seeing this as an overwhelming task. So we've got to make it simpler for them.
And I won't deny that this is a lot of work for any municipality to take on, just as the process of going through plan endorsement with the state plan was also burdensome. We are more fortunate in that we are able to offer the towns, as you say, the money to defray the costs associated with this. But what we're doing, Mimi, is really taking to heart what you're saying. We're going to have the plan conformance guidelines for municipalities. It's very simple. That speaks to the issues, and then it gets far more technical when you get into the standards for every single ordinance. But as we talk to the towns as well, One of the things, the fact that we're giving those mini grants has been very well received by towns. Since we last saw you, I think we've received two letters at least from towns. And a second one, it's the Borough of Washington in Warren County expressing an interest in proceeding to consider conformance. I believe Mendham Borough sent us a letter. It was in response to the informational meeting we held. But in their case as well, they were very pleased to hear about the mini grant because at least it gives them something. It's sort of like a good faith money to start the process.
It's not going to cover it, though.
No, it wasn't intended to. It was intended for that first sort of look-see.
Because the towns, you know, they're wrestling with plan conformance, state plan conformance, with their COA conformance, particularly now that the rules have been changed and they have to go back and review all that. And now we're going to ask them to review the Highlands.
We recognize that. The one good point about this is they don't have to do state plan endorsement if they do conformance, because if they get conformance, they automatically have endorsement. The reverse
now
is not true.
Yeah, we have to stretch. Yeah, we have to stress that.
Yeah.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
John, tangent off of it. I agree with the point you're making, Mimi. That's a big issue for towns, particularly this year. The mini grants, did the letter go out to municipalities?
No, because we're putting together the guidelines, but we anticipate having that out, I believe.
Hopefully by the end of next week.
It just dawned on me sitting here that in order for municipalities to spend money, they have to appropriate it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're finalizing their budgets right now.
That's right. Yeah.
And I don't know where this, and it's not a criticism, it's just dawning on me that this is probably coming awfully late in the budget planning process for municipalities, and they're either going to have to go back and try and amend it later, but I'm just going to throw it out there as an issue for you to think about and see, and maybe at the very least provide some advice to municipalities, you know, acknowledge this in the letter, and maybe how they might go about, because it's going to take some time to get the application in, for you to review it, for you to approve it, and by then the budget cycle's over. And, you know, if it's sizable amount, it's problematic, and I don't have an answer. Just got occurred to me sitting here.
Well, thank you, Debbie. It's a good point.
I'd just like to make another comment about these mini grants. You know, they are mini to me, who comes from a very big town. It's very different. You know, if you have a town that has 3 square miles, it might take, you know, $10,000 to come up with a plan or whatever. If you got a town that's 25 square miles, that's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. The only thing
so is we're going to have some flexibility in this if we want all towns to buy into this, because they're not all
well,
the same.
Well, I think we addressed that as best we knew how in the resolution.
I can just tell you that since you've taken that action, Tom and I have visited, I don't know how many towns, we do roughly 2 a week, but they've been pleased with it. I mean, none of them have said, oh my God, you've saved us, you know, this money is going to, you know, take us out of deficit. But they've all appreciated the fact that they're already doing this work unpaid. So now we're going to give them some money, because when we go to their towns, we get a list of questions from them in advance. Their planners, their engineers, and their attorneys are already doing the work. At least now we're recognizing it and saying that the money we're giving them is for them to issue a report to us. They won't do any planning activities with that kind of money that we're offering, because you're right, Mimi, it isn't anywhere near what they'd need. That comes in this plan conformance grant guidelines. The guidelines and standards for grants will be created to meet the needs of municipal and county conformance. We've got to time that out as well, because it also gets to the issue of they don't have to do all the work and then get the money, but we'll have certain items that they can do, and they can get the money when they complete those items. So we're going to have those guidelines for them. And we'll let you all know. When we have that letter ready to go out as well, we're going to send it out to all of you, and we'll attempt to look at Debbie's question. I'm not sure on the resolution either, but yeah. Oh, the next is the property search tool. Now, we discussed this with you recently when we were looking at the contract, but this is about leveraging free applications such as Google Maps in order to be on the cutting edge for dissemination and collection of data. Now, that's what we've done with the property search tool. The property search tool uses information that we've assembled in-house, like our overlay zones, protection and planning areas, but it uses the Google platform, which is free, so it certainly makes the cost very, the use of them is free, so that's a good cost.
Could get lower than that.
No, we couldn't get lower than that. But there's, you know, we then assemble all our data and we're putting it into that information. So, and we're finding that that's a tool that is being very widely used by people. So if they go onto our website, they go onto the property search tool on the right, click that you agree, and then you can go in and look at block and lot level information. We want to develop that tool, and our GIS department came up with the HiMap. Highlands, interactive, HiMap, and consistency reporting tool. This next phase of the property search tool will be a functional web-based application that will assist the public in determining consistency with policies and resource protection even prior to submitting an application. Now, in the interest of transparent government and trying to get out there ahead, how many times do we hear that when an applicant comes, they're then told, no, you can't do it because of ABC? It would certainly be better if they could actually utilize a tool like this, go in and look at a piece of property and pull up all the layers of information. I believe we have 57 at this stage. Hines, that's how I remember it. If they could pull up all that information, they could then know before they start submitting an application what the resources are, how they would design something to meet the protection of those resources. So we're working on that. It obviously could be used by free. It's used for the entire public. That's the first phase of the next phase of that property search tool. And the second phase is the Highlands Development Credits Act allocation. Again, council has been very clear on trying to make these applications simple. A landowner doesn't want to sit down and do incredible calculations to figure out what the potential is for TDR. So the second phase of this tool would be to likewise be able to go onto this web-based tool and put in your block and lot, or maybe multiple block and lots, and find out what credit, how many credits would be assigned to you for possible use of TDR, HDC, Highlands Development Credits on that particular site. That would be before they would submit a formal application, which would require then the verification of that number. But again, it's to try and be transparent and try to get out ahead, give people information in a user-friendly tool.
What's the timeline on this? Do you have any idea?
The HiMap and consistency reporting tool, we're hoping to get done before we release plan, or at the time of release plan. Likewise with the HDC allocation, but it does depend on working with an outside consultant on some of these issues. So we're depending on them as well to be timely. That's our goal.
That's revolutionary, really. Or evolutionary.
I think
evolutionary.
I've constantly got nightmares of being revolutions. Public comment response tracking and document. I did tell you that the public comments are available online in that database and searchable in different ways. The comment response document, as promised, there will be two actually. One will be to the 2006 release, and the second will be to the 2007 release. Those documents will be available at the time that you consider release of the plan.
Will there be a comparison of the evaluation of the comments received on the first iteration compared to the second iteration?
We haven't considered that. Many comments, in fact, many people gave the same set of comments but just slightly changed or, you know, whatever for the second set.
They made changes in the second draft. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So. What I'm suggesting is, if it's not impossible, it doesn't take too much time.
Thank you.
to show where what we call now the final RMP draft has been changed in response to those comments.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We've done that. We've done, and that's part of the comment response document to show we changed this to, you know, to meet that. And that, so for both sets, yes, definitely.
But to some extent, the comment response document on the final draft, that the comment response document can't be finalized until after we adopt the plan because we may make changes in that final meeting.
Yeah, we're going to try and keep up with you.
Right, okay.
I have a question about that. When will we see a draft of the comment response document? Because to not have it available till we vote to release makes it a non-actionable document. I mean, it's something we should want to be looking at as we move towards adoption.
That was in the schedule you announced earlier. I think before you arrived, there was a schedule of what will happen and when, and that was, I think, included in that. Am I right?
Yeah, we do need to do more work on that. And I said to you, what I tried to do is get out ahead a couple of weeks ahead and tell you what we're, what's right. coming up on the you know the next subsequent couple of meetings. But in terms of your request, I mean, I think what we'll work on getting the 06 one, because we've got that done in house. Get that to you. The 07 one is iterative in that, as you make decisions at these meetings, we then can put the response into the comment document.
What do we have, though, that summarizes? I mean, the council should be looking at what issues were raised, deciding which ones, some action, you know, some response. I don't mean a response like a document. I mean a response in the plan. And then what are we going to have to work with?
And that was what I said earlier, was that on the website now, we put it up for the public as well. The public comments are up there. And if you go onto the homepage on the right, you can click on it there, or you can click on it underneath the picture in the middle of the homepage. And you can search comments there that have been cut and pasted into this document. So you can search them in different ways. But you can search them under each of the issues, and they follow the path, the development of the RMP. So you can go in piece by piece to follow the RMP and look at the comments on each part of it. That's already available for you.
As we're discussing each issue, we'll be aware of what the public comments were on that issue.
If you go to that database and look at that issue, yes, you can then see the comments.
And the issues have been derived from the comments.
Correct. And from your comments as well, and comments at these meetings.
So the response to the comments will be how we respond to these issues that have been identified, right?
Correct.
The final. Absolutely the final. Right. But, you know, what like we're working with in the meantime.
Well, I would just, this here really is that process.
Yeah. Right.
And we will be spending, we're not going into the depths of these
right now.
Issues now, yeah. But over the coming weeks, we'll be grappling with that.
Right.
The next one is RMP update procedures. This is just updates. This is factual information. What we're doing currently is developing procedures, and again, a web-based tool for updates, keeping on with our evolutionary approach here. What we'd like to do is the tool that we've been talking about earlier, the property search tool. I talked about two phases, and a third phase would be this phase, which would allow municipalities to, so say a municipality makes an open space purchase, so it's de-restricted in perpetuity, they want us to update our map. They can have an authorized user on the tool. They'll give us that information. We verify it. We change the maps to recognize that. So it gives us a way of constantly updating our information. So what we're trying to do is, A, develop the procedures, because there has to be some sort of verification. A good example of this is where you have infrastructure projects. So you've got wastewater and potable water. We have pipes in the ground. So if a town says to us, you haven't captured all, we've got more here, we'll ask them either to have their professional engineer sign off on that, so that we've got someone who's saying that they're verifying the information they're sending us to be accurate, or they could do like what we did building it, was to have billable records. If we can see, yes, this street, all these homes are, we'll put that information in. So what we're designing is, first of all, the procedures to make sure that we do that and that we can have verifiable information, and obviously taking the information in a GIS-based format assists us then in correcting this information. And then also designing the web-based tool to make it far easier for municipalities, because we'll then be able to, it'll be shared. So they'll be able to use the same tool as us and offer to their public the same access to their information, which we'll house here and constantly update.
Question on that. Where will map adjustments go? Not under this, it would go under a different...
Okay. I didn't want to mix those.
Right. Yeah. Did you say it later or something?
I believe
okay.
I did.
Okay. Yeah, it is. Okay.
State development and redevelopment plan and endorsement, Highlands Bill, that model, these two matters are related. To meet the smart growth assessment provisions of the Highlands Act, a build that analysis is needed. Again, when I said that, you know, we're not starting this work now as we put these issues out to you, many of these issues we've known about, Mr. Olson. So we've been working on this since the release of the last plan. And that was because we needed to know what the mapping and the policies and goals looked like and the infrastructure, et cetera, so that we could do a regional build-out analysis. This build-out analysis is also a critical piece of state plan endorsement. we are required, after we adopt a plan, to submit for plan endorsement for the planning area of the Highlands. And the Office of Smart Growth requires, and the State Planning Commission, require a build-out model. So this model works for both of these. And so, again, what we're trying to do is be prepared so that when we get to the consideration of adoption of this plan, that we would assume thereafter as possible, given the governor's veto period, etc., we would submit for plan endorsement, because that becomes critical for those towns with lands in the planning area that want to consider conformance, that we have gone through that process first.
But the build-out analysis is critical, way beyond relationship with the State Planning Commission. One of the questions I was going to ask today, and I guess this is as good a time as any, is when are we going to see that? Because we're setting a date for adoption of the plan, but we don't even have the build-out analysis yet, which is critical to a thoughtful final regional master plan. So where do you see the timing for that fitting in? When will we have something to look at that's in close to finished form and for the public to review relative to build-out analysis, which will identify potential TDR receiving areas more specifically? Have a number of factors related to it.
Now, I know on the calendar what we sat down as a staff to sort of work out where the issues would fall in terms of calendar. Now, I can't be exactly precise for all of these meetings at this point in time, but I know that we had looked at having the build-out analysis before you in June, and the reason for that was any other changes that you make may require us to run the numbers again. Mm-hmm. So we're always trying to play catch-up, but I appreciate what you're saying, Debbie, because I believe what you're saying is you don't know the effects of the plan till you see the build-out analysis and see what it means across the region. So,
and the capacity. We still haven't really nailed down some of the capacity issues, which determines what our map and our plan should be. I mean, I know carpe for the horse, right. And sometimes I don't think we've put it in the right direction, frankly, but
we find that the horse keeps overtaking and the cart keeps, they keep evolving. But we actually have rough cut numbers, but we're refining them for the entire region. We're refining them because we have to look at it from, and this, Glenn, gets to a question you asked, municipality by municipality, yes. We're not doing this on a block and lot level. We're doing it, it's a regional, but we will be able to give numbers from municipal numbers. Okay. This second part just gets to the requirement to submit to the State Planning Commission a plan endorsement petition. And again, why that's important, though, is it is important for any community with lands in the planning area, because it is subsequent to our receiving plan endorsement that then if they receive conformance, they have their equal to endorsement. So we need to get through that process so that then they can have that recognition. So it's important for us to do this. And as I say, we expect to do that as soon as possible after, and so that's why we're preparing for it already. We have been having close work with the Office of Smart Growth and State Planning Commission on these issues, and did do a presentation before the State Planning Commission on our regional master plan. Septic density model. Now, this is, as I said earlier, some of these are critical for the regional master plan. Some is an ongoing work. Sometimes it's like the procedures we spoke about. In this case, this is really an ongoing science research issue, but very important as we recognize. One parameter used in formulating the septic system yield that we have in the regional master plan was the target nitrate standards for the various zones in the land use capability map. New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection target nitrate standards have been adopted within the existing community zone and the preservation areas. So we're only looking at the planning area, protection and conservation zones. In those areas, we established zone targets using estimated background nitrate concentrations for each sub-watershed in the zones. We recognize here that the more data we can bring to this, the more data rich it is, the more specific our analysis can be, and the better guidance we can give to municipalities over time. We also expect, and this is something that Tracy had spoken about, that when we monitor the effects of the plan over time, it's going to constantly be changing, and our policies need to keep up with that. So as part of this ongoing science agenda, we've already started working with USGS to better estimate representative target standards for protection and conservation zones. And as much as we're looking at the possibility of getting more point data from, you know, from other sources, so that we could really have a better representative model of what the nitrates are in throughout the region.
As they change.
As they at each point in time and as they change, yes. We see this as really being going ongoing, but we've already started that work as well.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Did I misunderstand then? I thought you were saying here that it's going to be, you're going to look at the median nitrate concentrations based on zone now instead of on HUT-14s. Is that not what you meant?
We will be looking at that, but we don't know if we're going to have that enough information ready for adoption of plan.
Oh, I see.
But that is what that's our target, is to get to that. But we want to make sure we have enough point data to make to really have a representation, so that we know exactly what those what the situation is today, so that we can plan moving forward, because that's how we set our nitrate zone targets.
It's done by zone and hoc.
Currently.
Okay.
But we want to be more specific on the zone end.
I see. Because it definitely will impact, for instance, the build-out analysis.
It will, but that's why we expect, that's going to be a constant sort of change,
yes,
in the plan. Because if we make progress, we need to change the numbers.
Yes.
And if we don't make progress, also we're going to need. So that is going to be part of the constant iterative process of this plan and its effect. But so we're starting now. So at every point in time when you make a decision on these kind of issues, 6 months later it may be a different picture with more, if we have more information available. And then as change occurs into the future, it'll constantly be changing.
When the DEP came out with their interim rules back eons ago, they had the septic lot densities of roughly 25 acres for, right. Where are we now?
Those are in their rules. They're adopted rules.
That is the number still.
Those are the numbers for the preservation area.
For the as promulgated by the DEP.
As promulgated by the Department
of Water. In their final rules.
Right. But in terms of our regional master plan, Where has this work brought us? If we were to ask right now, you know, what is the average lot density based on all of our work for farmland and forest land, what's the answer?
Okay, we do have an answer to that. Well, first of all, within the preservation area, the DEP standards are what apply. So it's 2588 in the preservation area. In existing community zone, we took the 2 milligram per liter standard established by DEP, which is their statewide standard. Now, for the planning area, conservation zone, and protection zone, what we did is we did an analysis that led to the septic system yield, because we wanted to offer flexibility to towns as to how they use that yield. So, but a mathematical calculation gets you to the acreage. And I'm trying to remember the exact acreage in,
you know, here. Those are average acreages over the whole series of sub-watersheds. It changes by sub-watershed. Right. So what the nitrate target was 1.87 for conservation zone and 0.72, I believe, for the protection zone.
Right.
And then it varies from sub-watershed to sub-watershed based on the recharge that you have available to dilute to that level.
Thank you, Dan. That's in our technical addenda. And what municipalities are already doing as we go out, they're already looking into that. And we went out to Randalls the other evening. No, it wasn't Randalls, but the other one. I think it was Mendham Borough. And they had looked that up and knew exactly what the yield was for their municipalities. So they're all, and so you can actually see in the technical addenda the numbers by watershed for each of the municipalities for septic density.
Kurt, was your question related to the preservation area?
Well, both. I just want to try to understand, you know, I know where we started. I'd just like to understand how our work has either supported those numbers or altered those numbers.
The reservation and planning area. We have not altered the preservation areas at all. What we did is we looked at the methodology employed.
Except
by
in the planned community zone. I'm sorry.
In the preservation zone. We haven't changed it at all.
Nothing. Every color, it's exactly the same.
The septic density is exactly as under the rules, right, by the DEP.
The reason I asked that, Kurt, is some of us anticipated we would be reviewing it with our data, mm-hmm, against the DEP, mm-hmm, interim rules and seeing where it relates to the 88 and 25,
But when we were presented with this draft of the regional master plan, all it did was adopt the DOP standards.
Well, is the conclusion supported by our science research? Is that
yes. We looked at their methodology, and their methodology was the exact same methodology as we used. So they used the information to find out what the median nitrates were in those areas, and those then established the targets. For the 88, it was forested areas, which are, you know, pretty much undisturbed forest areas, and that led to a very low nitrate level that was there, and that was the established target, which led then to that 0.72. In the open areas, they did their study to look to see what the nitrates were, and it was 1.87 in those.
I'm sorry. In the preservation area, the forested areas are significantly lower than the 0.72. Those were entire zones. I guess the easy way to put it is that the work that USGS did with regard to nitrate levels in the preservation area would lead to average, you know, when you take all the forested and all of the non-forested and put it all together, it leads to average densities that were very much in support of the average densities that DEP came up with using their methods. There was nothing that we found that caused us to conclude that those numbers should be changed.
And just to be clear, we, again, long ago discussed a scale where we would, if you looked at an entire parcel and it had cropland and woodland on it, rather than treating that whole parcel as two separate parcels, applying percentage of cropland, percentage of woodland, and have we done that in our
draft? We recommended changes to the DEP rules from their interim to final, and they actually incorporated that suggestion that we made into their rules.
And that's what we have in our draft master plan then?
Well, it's by reference for the DEP.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Just to be clear.
Let me kind of suggest something, because this is supposed to be a brief summary of the issues we're going to discuss in detail, and we've gotten through half of the brief summary. So if we could all try to, and the idea here is for us all to get written comments back to the staff, so we'll try to limit the comments to some extent, so we can get into the first substantive issue. Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we limit, can I ask this? No. Can't get in before the deadline. You know, you said here that you used the DEP standards for the preservation area and the existing community zone. But it's our plan that has designated the existing community zone, right? I mean, the DEP didn't have a designation for that those areas.
You're correct. They have established a statewide nitrate target of 2 milligrams per liter. Now, we wouldn't want it to be less protective than they are in the entire state, so we took that number for the existing community zone. And remembering also that in the existing community zone, much of those areas are patched, so yeah, public infrastructure. The technical reports to be amended and finalized. Now, again, this is another piece of ongoing work, because as you make changes, we have to amend the technical addenda. All draft reports have been subject to council and public review, and all these reports will be finalized subsequent to the end of the public comment period and released to the public upon the Council's adoption of the RMP. So given that we're beyond public comment now, as we go through these issues and as you make changes or decisions, we will change those in the technical report and finalize them. So that, again, when we get after the adoption of the RMP, we would have all the technical addenda as well.
So one way to look at it is that the adoption will include three components: the plan, the comment response documents for both 06 and 07, and technical reports for all matters.
But the technical reports will be a part of the RMP.
No, they'll be a separate supporting document.
So, I mean, to be clear, so on July 17th, if we approve a plan and that plan is presented to the governor, that would include the technical reports at that point?
When it's presented to the governor, yes. As soon as, when you do the plan, there'll be a little bit of time for us to quickly change things and get them ready, and then, yes, they'll go out as well. And these next couple of slides just look at the different technical reports and that need to be amended and finalized. And we've got some information, updated information since they were done. And so just running through quickly, air quality, to update the information. Again, we received comments on this to include the information on the environmental impacts from sulfur dioxide in Warren County due to Pennsylvania power plants. Historic, cultural, scenic, recreational tourism. The role of recreational tourism as part of the economic development program should be included. And add details to scenic resource protection, advocate a region-wide approach to protect ridgelines, and address the use of ATVs on public lands. These are all comments we received. We'll attempt to make recommendations to you. You will decide. Ecosystem comments support and object to the policy and mapping methodology of the 1,000-foot buffers around NJDEP-confirmed vernal pools. Critical habitat section was amended to include the analysis presented in the addenda. Comments on forest management practices will also be addressed. The financial analysis information to be updated includes the cash flow timetable to reflect fiscal year 08 and Highlands Act appropriations. Data from Sustainable Economic Development Programme, cost to implement the Highlands Act, Highlands Build-out Analysis and Fiscal Impact Analysis. All of that will be added to that technical report. Land preservation, conservation priority areas, indicators and maps outlined in the November 07 technical report addenda need to be incorporated into the technical report, as do new GIS data and metadata. Some preservation numbers need updates. So again, this is just as time passes, we have to keep going back and amending these to get them into final form. Local participation needs updating to incorporate more recent activities and to reflect the final draft RMP. Regional land use conditions and smart design. This technical report needs updates to ensure that its contents are up to date, including the technical, the redevelopment and infill tool that we developed and additional housing information. Sustainable agriculture. Revisions needed to address public comments and to support new discussions included in the final draft. The 2007 technical report addenda outlining ag priority areas needs to be incorporated here. And Section 6, agricultural sustainability, will be strengthened based on feedback from council and public. Transfer of development rights. Include a discussion of areas within the Highlands region that have the potential to serve as voluntary Highlands development credit receiving zones. Again, this is an update from 06 to 07. The report will be amended to include that analysis. Other revisions are being made to the Highlands Development Credit Programme section of the RMP based on public comments received. Transportation. Information needing to be updated includes the transit system network to include, for example, the new Mount Arlington train station and certain private bus carrier information that we have collected. The approach and development of the baseline transportation and transit layer incorporated into the land use capability map, in particular that the overlay zone map, we want to include that into the technical addenda. Growth-induced effects on transportation must be incorporated. Additional work completed in response to public and council comments included there as well. Utility capacity. Detail and clarity is needed to ensure the document supports the related parts of the regional master plan. So again, this is really bringing it up to date with what we've done in 2007 and what we anticipate to do with utility capacity, which I'll get into another, in another slide. We need to amend the Highlands Domestic Sewage Facilities table and map to reflect addition of Long Valley Village Wastewater Treatment Facility. We need formatting updates to the to that map as well, and quality assurance and revisions to the public community water systems and demand and source data table. This is an area too where we anticipate having updates. We've already talked to towns to understand that, you know, we will get that the information from them once they can get it to us in a form again that can be verified so that we can do those updates. Water resources, that technical report needs to be updated to reflect policy changes outlined in the addenda regarding water availability and septic system capacity. Modified it again as needed to address public comments.
All of these technical reports that are going to be updated will have a cutoff date because we have to adopt the plan, and what you're telling us, I think, is that these updates will be part of the final draft plan, or an addendum to them, at a certain point in time. Subsequently, they will need to be amended again as time goes on and changes are made.
Right? Yes.
So this is, as we've said from the start, the dynamic process that is going to be changing as we continue to work at it, just like life is in many respects. What is the cutoff date now for these reports to be updated so that the documents can then be attached to the RIP, to the final?
We're looking at the end of June, but it really depends on your work, because if even if at the very end you're making a change that requires us to change the tech, we keep these documents running concurrently. As you make changes in one area, we'll update the technical reports. And a lot of what I just outlined were changes because of the 2007 final draft, so staff are already working on those issues and in many cases have incorporated changes. So we see it as running along. It would be somewhere at the end of June.
It will stop at that point.
Yes, but we expect we can make last minute changes, provided they're not huge, obviously, because if one thing can impact another.
Is it a waste of time to not have a cutoff date and to stop the update process so that we can get on with the plan and have the technical reports attached to them and continue to update the technical reports as needed, but not have it interfere with what we're trying to do in getting a final version of the plan and the technical reports that will be associated with it at a point in time?
It would certainly give us more room if you were to say that, you know, they could follow the plan X amount of time afterwards. My only concern is that the public and the different agencies, counties, towns want to see the technical information. So I suppose if you could say that they could still be revised afterwards, that would be beneficial.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Perhaps so
should not have couched it as a waste of time. I didn't mean that. But a better use of time would be in directing your efforts and staff's efforts toward getting us to the point so that we could say, okay, here's the package. This is now what we'd like you to vote upon. And then do that, knowing that as time goes on, everlastingly, there will be changes and technical information will need to be updated.
My sense is that'll largely happen, but there are conceivable policy changes we could make at the last meeting that would have an impact on one or more technical reports. Mm-hmm. Because the technical reports, it's not as if the technical reports are simply data divorced from, that we're then relying on for the policies. They are that, but then there's more in there that people would read. The technical reports need to be consistent with the final plan. Yes, that's right.
They do.
So,
I think what we could do is we certainly, if this is sort of open for discussion, when we get to June, you could check with us and see if it means that the dates go off. Maybe we can have a look at then at what point we are at, and see if we're keeping up with it in both sides. But I think you're offering us an opportunity to say, here are the technical reports at this time. There still need to be some last-minute changes to them. So it gives us a little bit of leeway to meet the dates.
It would be up to the council, I think, to make that determination. I know that was one of the issues that Debbie was sort of alluding to earlier. And I, mm-hmm. That would be fine with me. I think that's a good notion.
Great. Well, we'll let you know how we proceed.
Okay, can I ask, talking about utility capacity and how we're going to reflect last-minute changes. You know, one of the things that we've known for a while is that our maps didn't reflect properly all the sewer collection areas and routes within the Highlands. Is this something that, when will towns be able to go in and amend those maps or that data?
We made some changes between 06 and 07 when towns had given us information that we were able to verify. We made some changes. We're actually talking to a few towns right now, and I'll give you an example. One town gave us information and said, look, you didn't get all our pipes in the ground correct. Here's the information. And as you read it, it said, when you looked to see how you could verify it, it said local knowledge. So we sort of explained that local knowledge didn't quite get us there. We needed something to verify the information. We expect the billing records, give your engineer to sign off. So these are the kind of difficulties. That's why earlier on I was talking about getting procedures lined up so that they understand this is the format you have to give it to us in so that we can verify it. That's going to be an ongoing process. We will not have those updates done when we adopt this plan. But in many cases, they don't affect the policies because they're usually captured in existing so that's my knowledge, they're captured in existing community zones anyway. So they maybe need some, not, and I shouldn't say that, not 100%, but it hasn't become a major issue. I mean, it's important for towns and they want us to get it right, and we will.
Well, you have to have that data, though, before we know what the excess capacity is out there, before we can determine build-out and things like that, don't we?
Well, no, because we can look at if there's a house there, whether it's got sewer or not, it's there.
We're going to assume that it's got it.
Well, we'll know that. So it's not vacant, so we won't count on the build-out analysis as a possibility because it does have a house, whether it's septic or sewer. So we're able to work through the process and know that we'll still make updates.
Say what I said before a little more directly. When, I mean, finish your presentation and then any of us can ask questions at the end.
Sorry. Water utility program. This is a new program in Chapter 5, again, because of comments received. We recognize this is necessary to link the policies and objectives regarding creation and extension of utilities applicable to planning, preservation and planning areas and zones. The program will also explain how utility capacity and service areas will be managed through the regional master plan. Land preservation and stewardship. Some comments that we received suggested combining several land and resource management and preservation plans at the municipal and county levels into a single land preservation and stewardship plan. So we're looking at that. Comments also suggested creating incentives for better management of invasive species and addressing the ecological damage due to excessive deer populations. So maybe it's also addressing the excessive deer populations there. So coming up with strategies and being aware of these issues. Also suggested was to create incentives in the regional master plan for forest stewardship plans, because the commenters say that these address ecological issues that are not covered under most forest or woodland management plans. So we're looking at that as well. And note that it's incentives. It's not to, there are certain exemptions afforded within the Act, but this gets to incentive programs, to incentivize these kind of plans. The goals, policies, and objectives and programs related to these issues should be reviewed, and the most cost-effective and useful ways to apply these suggestions should be examined. So we're looking at these issues. Buffers for Highlands Open Waters. The DEP's new Flood Hazard Area Control Act rules, they were adopted after the regional master plan provisions had been written for the Highlands Open Waters. And their buffer modification concepts need to be reviewed by us to ensure that the regional master plan is never less restrictive than their requirements. And then any provisions for buffer reductions or averaging should be reviewed to make sure they meet the protective provisions of the Act. Critical habitat, goals, policies, objectives, and the program. Policies for first avoidance of critical habitat, then minimization of impacts where avoidance is not entirely possible, and finally mitigation need to be made more clear and concise as well as consistent throughout the document. We had meetings on these issues where it was pointed out to us that this wasn't clear. It certainly was intended, but if it isn't clear, we have to make it clear. And then we have to make that consistent through the document, that it follows that avoidance first, minimization second, and finally mitigation. The no net loss threshold for mitigation needs to be more specific, so we'll have to work on that. Which landscape project ranks are used to define critical wildlife habitat needs to be clarified, as do exceptions or waivers that are applicable to various types of critical habitat, and how these are various issues, and how rare plants located outside of significant natural areas, because we've captured those significant natural areas, but are aware that there are rare plants sometimes located outside, how those issues should be addressed. And finally, the feasibility of mitigation and restoration for upland habitats needs further research and discussion. Water availability and deficits. Clarification needed regarding the burden of proof and guarantees for successful mitigation. Developing a modified approach to deficit mitigation that links mitigation requirements to deficit size and considers whether development is appropriate in areas of severe deficit. And this is to get to the issue of the deficits are different across the region, as shown in our mapping, and it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Perhaps we should look at modifying the approach that we suggested, and that's what we're going to do and come back to you with a recommendation on that, so that you don't have one approach for a town that's just got a minimal deficit and the same approach for one that's got severe deficit. So we'll look at that. Clarify how mitigation can be guaranteed and the role of water management plans. And coordinating with Department of Environmental Protection policies regarding how that agency will achieve deficit reductions in parts of the Highlands region where their method also shows deficits. Currently, we show more deficits because of the very nature of our plan. We're more protective. But if we can work with them, because again, it's to see if we have a consistent approach, because they show some areas of the Highlands as in deficit. Public health and safety waiver for failing septic systems. The Act speaks to a documented pattern of failing septic systems. This needs to be more clearly defined. The method for showing that that should be no that no alternative is feasible needs to be defined. It's a typo there, I apologise. How to address an issue where septic systems are not failing but still present a significant threat to public health through excessive discharges. This gets to the issue that you examined recently for Mount Arlington and Roxbury when they had an issue with septics on small lots and discharges to the lake. To address these issues, more detail is needed in the wastewater system management and water quality restoration programs in the plan. And we want to develop draft regional master plan goals, policies, objectives, and program improvements that clarify these issues. Sustainable agriculture. Comments requested further clarification on what types of agricultural development are and are not covered by different goals, policies, and objectives. Different ideas were provided regarding how to improve sustainability and clarify the role of the Right to Farm Act and other state and federal programs. This gets to your issue, Kurt. And I will again state, though, that the Right to Farm Act is an ordinance is required for all conforming municipalities. But we certainly received comments that more work needs to be done on these issues. Develop draft goals, policy, objective clarifications and additional language for agricultural management and sustainability programme. The land use capability map zones. We're developing a table that shows how key policies apply to the various zones and subzones. Draft goals, policy, objective clarifications regarding, in particular, the environmentally constrained subzones. That's in the existing community zones and in the conservation zones. Developing draft clarifications to the land use capability analysis program regarding the existing community zone. This is because we want to make it very clear that some of these existing community zones have no further capacity for growth. It is not to be considered that they all do. Many do not. Others may have capacity to accept growth, but it has to be very clear that that growth is discretionary. It is at the will of the municipality. So we need to be clearer in this. Plan conformance summary and checklist. This gets to what you were saying, Mimi. We talked earlier about creating that matrix and having all those standards, but you've got to make it something that people can get a hold of and see what the issues are in a very simple way. So we're developing a plan conformance summary checklist and a checklist for both municipalities and counties. RMP adjustment procedures. This, Tracy, is the adjustments as opposed to the updates. We need to clarify the goals, policies and objectives and the program for plan adjustments as needed to ensure that the intent, again, of the regional master plan is achieved, and to prepare plan adjustment procedures to provide detailed methods and guidance to communities. So we'll be bringing this back to you as well for your consideration. Transfer of development rights. The limitations of the GIS analysis that we did in the regional master plan needs to be clarified, as well as making it very clear what the necessary steps are to establish a voluntary transfer development rights receiving zone. What we want to be clear here is there is no mapping of receiving zones. The mapping that was done was a GIS analysis on the potential for voluntary receiving zones. So there's a place to start based on when you got to the final level of the analysis where there was infrastructure and capacity, but it didn't look at what was actually on the ground there. It's just a place to start looking And it was a requirement of the Act to do that analysis. But certainly, the limitations need to be very clear and some review of that. The mapping provided, again, it's a GIS-based analysis before resource assessments and capacity analyses have been undertaken. So we need to be very clear on that issue. That's it.
So I think the next step with this, I think for all of us who have, any of us who have other issues we think need to be addressed in the between now and the final plan, to get that to Eileen, I guess really in the next week, so that you can update that list for the following council meeting. And I think this would be a good item where if there are other issues any of us think should be addressed, we should, you know, want to copy the rest of the council so we all can see those. And these issues, Eileen just went over and spelled out a little more detail in the handout in our packet. It's more discussion, but the issue at this point is not how the issues are handled, but just to make sure we have a complete list, a pretty complete list of the issues we're going to handle, and if we have to bring up more in the following weeks, we will. So before we move into the first issue, any comments, questions on this? Yes.
I have one question about the Leon's preservation, item 17, you just went on over. We've had much discussion over the years about the fact that properties within the Highlands, some of the properties where there may be willing sellers for preservation, they fall outside of all the existing state preservation programs. They don't qualify for Green Acres. They don't qualify for an SADC program. I just want to make sure that we haven't lost that somewhere from one of our objectives, that we're going to try and work on that. Where is that?
Part of that actually will be covered in the next presentation, because we're going to talk about what the list that we're giving to Green Acres and SADC, which may be different to what they would normally consider. So that'll get to part of your issue, Debbie. And then other parts of that is the TDR program, and that's one of the objectives within that program, is to look at landowners that have suffered severe hardship make them first.
And the third would be policies relating to GSPT reauthorization, any amendments to that statute to expand various programs that exist.
Thank you.
Okay, if you're ready for this one. Okay, this is the first of the issues that you're going to be looking at that we've got prepared for you for this meeting. And I did talk about this briefly at a previous meeting. The requirement that we have to do the prioritization of properties for acquisition by Green Acres and the State Agricultural Development Committee. This is a requirement from the Act, and the Act says any such list shall remain confidential, notwithstanding any provision of, and then the law there, or any other law to the contrary. So the first thing is that this is a confidential list for obvious reasons. The recommendations, the Act further says, must include a methodology for prioritizing the acquisition of land, particularly where land value has declined substantially because of the Act. So this gets in part to what you were saying, Debbie. And SADC and Green Acres will give, and again from the Act, higher weight to planning area municipalities that establish TDR receiving zones. The Act spoke to these lists being for the preservation area. We're doing preservation area and planning area, putting them giving them in two separate lists, because we believe it is critically important as well to focus on the lands within the planning area. Given that, like when you look at the agricultural, a lot of the good agricultural land and the active farms fall into the planning area. So we've done the analysis for both. In looking at the agricultural priority area, that's where we started the analysis. So what I'm doing now is going over with you the methodology that we used to come to these lists. The lists themselves will only be shared with Green Acres and SADC, but we need direction from you that you are on board with the methodology used. And I do want to say, because now that we're talking about the list that goes to the State Agricultural Development Committee, in a briefing call yesterday with Councilmember Cotter, he asked us to consider the information that the County Agricultural Development Boards compiled, because they have both their priority they set forth priorities as to how they will go about compiling their lists, and further, their State Agricultural Development Committee gives them, under the new program they're working on, a certain sort of categorization that they have to go through. So in response to that, to those comments yesterday, the staff, and it was in particular Kim Kaiser and Erica Webb, worked on these issues. They stayed last night to make sure that we could have a response for Mr. Cogger this morning on the issue. And what we did is we looked at the information that was available from the counties to check to see if we've been considering the same type of information, though granted we have particular information that they don't consider on top of that. And in looking at the different counties, I'm glad to tell you that when you look at the State Agricultural Development Committee's guidelines, that we are concurring with those. And in particular, if you look at Morris County, for example, there's higher weight given, for example, to larger farms. We do follow the vast majority, I think it was out of 100 points, 80 points is taken into consideration in our methodology as well. So whereas the list may not be the exact same as their list, because part of how they compile the list is a willing landowner as well. So, but did want to report, and I did tell Mr. Cogger this morning, that we did look at what he asked us to look at to make sure that it was considered and not overlooked in our analysis.
One quick thing for the public. The handout we gave out is missing some pages. We're making extra copies. We'll have that shortly.
I did want to make one other comment, and that was that we discussed, is that we ought to be looking at the list that is developed here for priority versus the list that are developed at the counties. And if there's not a fair, you know, link up, we ought to understand why. One of my fears is that we take a look at these lands as they may exist from GIS data or other information, and in reality they may have been farmed, or they may not be able to be farmed anymore, there may be some other aspect. And we ought to be looking at those priorities. Also, in the state of New Jersey, I think the average farm is 25 acres, Kurt? Is that 26 acres?
Depending on which data you use.
So part of the sustainability argument for agriculture is you have to realize that you may have an operator who owns a farm of 25 acres that may be farming 1,000 acres. And if you fail to give priority to that particular parcel, you may in fact be putting in jeopardy lots of other acreage that you're not cognizant of. The CADBs would be more able to understand that in their priorities and as how they look at farm preservation within their community. Those are my comments.
But Bill, they use a totally different basis for setting. I hear what you're saying, and the best we could coordinate. But isn't ours a environmental resource?
This is talking about the sustainability of agriculture. This is not different. This is not environmental. This is not a great example would be if you had a farm that was 70% forested. Well, that may have a high priority for preservation in the highlands, but a low priority for preservation as a farm in terms of area that's available for cropland.
Which gets to my point earlier about properties that fall outside of existing.
That's what you have to look at. And if you're dealing with a priority list, my guess is going to be fairly well adopted by the SADC. And if you're not familiar with their process, they rank every farm that they get, and they go down the list based upon the amount of money, and then they draw the line. So if we're adding weight to that ranking, we need to be careful that we don't add weight in the wrong area. And again, I'm talking about the ag stuff, not preservation overall of open space. So it's really important that we don't do things that, you know, unravel some of the work that's been done. I'm not suggesting we are. We just need to be cognizant of that when we go through it.
And being cognizant of that, I'll get to it. We did actually look at where farms had a large amount of forestry, because sometimes they flipped to the other list. So we did consider those kind of issues. We did look at ag use. And I will say that we took into consideration everything that Bill had said to us, but we do have other issues that we include in our listing for priorities, and that gets to resources. So even in the ag areas, so you're right, there's sort of an intersection, but there's also a separateness. And we've discussed this with the State Agricultural Development Committee as well, that there are certain issues that rise for us because of resources.
I guess just my point is if our top 10 didn't show up anywhere on the CADB list, that ought to be concerned. But if they're ratio was perhaps a little off, that wouldn't be a concern. That's a good internal check and balance in terms of the listing that you get.
And we've already started that process. As a result of yesterday, we actually pulled the Morris County farms, and we've started a comparison. And, you know, we can see certain things emerging. We looked at another county as well. Certain issues arise. We have many in the preservation area that may not show up in the planning area. And there's a reason for that. You only have to look at the area within the preservation area and the soil, et cetera, to understand where there might be some differences. But what you explained to us, Bill, is you wanted us to make sure we knew why there were differences. So we're certainly taking that into consideration. The place we started was with our agricultural priority areas, and that takes into consideration highest agricultural resource value. That also uses land use, land cover, looking at crop, pasture, orchard, that kind of those issues. The ag priority area assists in the prioritisation of farmland preservation, the work we've already done. Factors determining those areas included ag resource areas, important farmland soils, undeveloped, preserved farms, agricultural uses covering 10 acres or more, 50% or more prime soils, and a quarter mile proximity to preserved farms. So in many cases, we found that we were intersecting with, as was done intentionally, with the State Agricultural Development Committee's priorities and with counties. Then what we did is, looking at the information, because we got this down to a block and lot level, agricultural priority parcels were determined using Mod 4 parcel data. So we looked at Mod 4 data to determine what were farm qualified parcels. Properties that were more than 90% moderate or high priority area in the ag priority areas were retained. And this is because we have to look at the size of the list, and we'll get into this, to make sure that we have a discrete list, but you'll see how that goes. Properties less than 25 total acres were excluded. Remember again that the Act said that we had to look at the land, the effect of the Act on land value. And so that gets into your zoning under your rules. So that's why the size of the farm became important in responding to the Act. Any ag priority parcels and preserved farmland parcels within 200 feet of each other were clustered and clipped to the Highlands boundary. Parcels with less than 25% agricultural use were removed if they were also on the conservation priority list, so that focus was on agriculture or natural resources as appropriate. So that took in some of your farms with larger forested areas, they often flipped.
Just a question on the 25 acres or less. You know, if you were looking at the Mod 4 data, how you're getting this, you could have four adjacent 25 acres spots all owned by the same person. Mm-hmm. And farmed across the whole 100 acres.
Yeah. Well, we have to find
a way to identify that type of activity.
The only thing is that if you're getting to the Acts saying that you have to look at those that have declined substantially in value, 25 acres was as you get larger in the farms, your decline is greater. So that was one of the guiding principles, because it was set forth by the Act. And so that's what so I do recognize, but then they have separate lots, mainly. So it's difficult for us to get to all the answers.
Yeah.
That's why the ag boards would have that information.
And that's what
our farm is, probably 8 or 10 lots.
Yeah, right. Somehow we have to find a way to identify a farm entity being comprised of whatever number of lots and blocks there are, and what the total acreage of a farm is.
Bill's right, that should be CADB.
Well, the CADB should have that data. I mean, if they've gone out and done their job right, they should know what the parcels are.
Well, one thing we are finding is that each county is very different in what information they have, but we will look at it, as you've suggested. And as I say, we've already started looking at the parcels. We've started that comparison. So that will be taken into consideration as best we can.
Listening to this, we've not had a land preservation subcommittee meeting in a long time, because it really wasn't work for us to do. I think this discussion here suggests we should convene one. Bill, you sit on it, don't you? I think you do.
I have to confess, in honesty, I don't know.
We should, instead of us having some of these issues here, would be better discussed in a subcommittee. And
the only issue with that is John had indicated that we wouldn't be having those, that, because it's the same with the Natural Resources Committee, that we weren't doing them, we were acting as a committee of the whole, so that we could move these forward.
Yeah, all right. Because part of the problem is, you know, if you look at the Thursdays between now and July 17th, there are very few when we don't have the council meeting. But
maybe we could, you know, get through some of these issues and get these things clarified and make some recommendations.
Well, perhaps. What's been happening, the issue I just brought up.
How could we resolve that?
Well, I mean, in, at least in recent times, the council has not been particularly deferential to any of our committees. So committees have met, had lengthy discussions, and then the entire discussion has been repeated at the council meeting. Yeah. So it hasn't seemed like a great use of the time of staff or members. There may be specific issues. Maybe this is one that pop up where that would be different. But
if you want to schedule time during a council meeting to discuss, that's fine with me too. It's you asked us to stifle ourselves. I'm trying to respect.
Well, this is the meat of the thing. So you shouldn't.
I would hope maybe the staff would be prepared to come forward with some suggestions.
We can look at it. We're somewhat stymied in the fact that this information isn't available across the region. So we can do our best, but we've already, through this analysis, if I follow it through, we'll show you where we end up with this. And we're taking into consideration, I mean, from our perspective, we follow the mandate of the Act, but then we're looking at, from a resource protection standpoint, it is the aggregation of large areas of protected land through farm preservation and land conservation that gets to our resource, greater resource protections under the Act. So our analysis and methodology is showing us that's what we're doing, is developing these kind of clusters. And then you will, by default, capture some of these, because when they're down with the Ag Board, with the State Agricultural Development Committee, they will have this information. And if other farms are falling within those clusters, they it's part of their ranking system to look at other preserved parcels, because they do this boundary.
I just think about the fact that finding some way to aggregate together all the properties that make up a farm would be valuable. Let's say that a farm owner wants to go in and use our tools to get an estimate of his credits for TDR purposes. And let's say that there are 6 lots associated with his farm. He'll have to go into all 6 lots to get an estimate, right?
And the tool can do. The tool is designed. He can put in that input, and he'll get. It'll list all of them, and it'll aggregate them, add them, and give him the answer. He won't have to go one by one and add them. The tool is designed to do that.
So add it up for him.
So we've got that covered.
As a TDR, they get priority.
Yes, that's mandated by the Act. So the thing is, we are restricted. The amount of work we can do in this is restricted by what's available to us. So.
But Bill says that it could be that the county agricultural boards have that information. Some they have each farm identified discreetly.
Some do and some don't.
5 to 25-acre lots is one farm, and right, seeing that is not a value, and that's why if they are able, I don't know that they're able, but
right.
If you check your list against the ag list, and all of a sudden the delta is very strange. You know that something's wrong. You got to go back and figure it out.
Bill's right, as far as Morris County is concerned. And I'm not saying that other counties don't have it, but Morris County is extraordinarily advanced on those.
I know.
That is the issue. So what I'm saying is we're listening, and we will do that as best we can. We'll have a look at it, and if the information is available to us, utilize it. But if it isn't, I'm not suggesting we start a research-based project to do that, because I don't believe
I was just going to comment on the 25 acres. I think you had said that there's not a substantial loss in equity in the farms that are 25 acres or less because of septic lot density, that the greater losses were occurring on bigger farms, and that was the substantiation to drop those out of the priority list. Did I hear that correctly?
Well, it's not quite. It goes. I'm not saying that they don't have a loss. And, I mean, we don't have appraisals to actually figure all of this out. But it goes up exponentially. So, what we've done as well is looking again at consistency. We work with the State Ag Board. They give higher marks for farms that are 50 acres or more, 25 to 49. Actually, this is from Morris County, 10 to 29. But they score them and rank them higher when they're large parcels as well. And we had to have a cutoff that worked.
And perhaps the cutoff is too high. You can have a small farm that can gross and net a whole lot more money than a big farm, depending on the crop mix that's in there. And if you were actually to survey a lot of the successful operations in Morris County right now, you'd find that the bases are under 25 acres, and yet there's substantial operations that produce a tremendous value of crops. You know, an acre of field corn may only gross, well, now prices are higher, maybe $600 per acre, but an acre of strawberries could potentially gross $7,500 to $10,000 per acre. An acre of containerized nursery stock or B&B nursery stock could be $20,000 an acre. So I think that recognizing the type of agriculture that exists in this region of the state, I think the 25-acre number doesn't represent some very significant operations that desire preservation or merit preservation.
We can take another look at it, but again, my concern is how large this list is getting, and if we go to the end, you'll see how large. But these are things that we can take another look at and come back and tell you how doable they are, given the information that's available.
And it goes back to Bill's point. I mean, I issue a couple examples of where there's under 25-acre bases that are farming several hundred acres.
Yeah.
And I know when you go into the Morris CADB, that is certainly something that they consider, the sustainability of the base operation, where there's the barns to chop the grain bins, whatever, and the impact that it has on other farms, and especially if those other farms are preserved farms. You know, there's a lot of little intricacies that come into play.
Now, does this list have to be available when we release the plan?
Yes, we have. Well, it doesn't say
it's not required that it be done, but that's our goal.
I think it's important that this list be correct as correct as we can make it.
It's really important issue, and we may, if we find some counties don't have this information, we may want to suggest to them that they do it if they want to assist their farm, their landowners in becoming TDR receiving areas. And to that end, I'd suggest, do you have your regular meetings with the county planners?
Yes.
I'd bring this up. Just throw this at them and see what they think about it.
Debbie, you give me an idea when you say that as well, though, because this list can be added to and changed over time.
Right.
We could actually, if we find that one county has the ability to do this, for example, it's Morris County, so if we know it can be done, we could consider, and I'm just throwing this out because I just thought of it now, a grant to other CADBs to do similar work if it seems to be of benefit and you think it is.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking.
And I don't know when Warren County will be big, but, you know, in this day and age, this isn't getting a man on the moon. Everything is GIS-based, and they know their farms pretty well, so it may not be that difficult of an undertaking and very useful.
So I would hate to see Morris County punished by not getting one of those grants because it's so aggressive.
I have no problem with punishing them. Sorry.
Well. Where would you get that kind of data to know
Bill's point to the CADB is an important one, because one of the other evaluation criteria that I know Morris uses is significance of importance to local community. And you could have a town that has a 20-acre farm that has a little retail market that the town just loves. It's an integral part of the town. It's supplying buy fresh, buy local needs, flowers in springtime. And to that town, it is the character of, you know, it maintains this character that is so important to that. And it may not have the 100 acres, but that 20 acres in this, what might be considered a pretty suburban or urban town, is so important and unique that they want at all expenses that to be preserved, and they're willing to invest to preserve it. And there are examples where that's happened. And somehow we have to capture that.
Right.
I think the point's been made, so I think we should move on and come back to it.
We recognize that the state gets its recommendations from the county and will continue to do so. And some of our goals are different. And we just recognize that. And then when you look, we took these things into consideration. And when it's 80 points out of 80, we're concurrent with them. On certain issues, like that example that Curtis gave us, is 0 to 3 points. So I'm saying we're 80% there. But
can we have a copy of that?
Absolutely not. It's this is from Morris County. CADB, it's available online. But I will get, that isn't to say I won't copy it for you, I will. We talked about agricultural priority parcels and preserve farmlands, try to get them when they're contiguous. The total ag priority parcels in clusters was 1,025 parcels, or 68,462 acres. And I remind you, the total acreage of the region is 160,000 acres, approximately.
Very quick question. When we say that parcels with less than 25% ag use, we are discounting forestry management as ag use. Is that correct in this model? If there's a parcel that has 100 acres, there's 25 acres of cropland, there's 75 acres of woodland that has a forestry management plan that's being actively implemented, we're saying that's not a farmland.
And those were the ones that generally flipped over to the conservation list, because we found that they were on both lists, and we flipped those to the conservation list. Because, and again, as we QC'd this visually as well to look and to make sure those clusters, and you captured things like that as well and made sure that those ones would be on the conservation list.
My only point would be that, you know, the rules of Morris have evolved a lot. And originally they had something similar. If it wasn't at least 50% cropland, it wasn't a farm, it ranked really low. And then later on they said, well, wait a minute, if you have a 100-acre parcel and there's 25 or 30 acres of cropland, we're preserving farms that have 20 acres of cropland. If that's an actively devoted parcel, what's the difference that they have additional woodland? That's a bonus. We should be looking at those properties, and they evolved away from that type of measurement. And so again, I understand what you're after, but you know, there's real farmers out there with big woodlots who enjoy having big woodlots, and it's to their credit that they didn't sell them and that it's privately owned open space and paying taxes. And why not preserve that and have them continue paying taxes on it? Mm-hmm.
But as I say, we capture those in the other list. But I know what you're saying, because you're looking at farm preservation.
It's farm preservation, and yeah. They may not want to be on the Green Acres Buy Me Out list. They may want to be on the I want to be on the farm list.
Well, we've captured them, so we could just put them back on and have them on both lists. Then we can do that. You don't want them taken off the list.
No, I'm not suggesting they be taken off the list. I'm just saying that.
Yeah. Okay. Right, moving on to the conservation priority area. Again, we started with the results of the resource assessment, which was used to identify those lands in the Highlands region which have the highest ecological resource value. Conservation priority area would assist in as a starting point. These areas represent a scale of relative value of 31 ecological indicators. That's in the technical addenda. And they were prioritized into moderate and high conservation priority areas. And you can see there the breakdown. Medium priority was from 14 to 21 factors, high priority 22 to 31 factors. So then what we looked at was vacant and farmland qualified properties of 10 acres or greater were used in this analysis. Residential properties of 20 acres or greater were included. Lots intersecting conservation areas greater than 10 acres also included. Open space and preserved farmlands were removed because they're already protected. Parcels were sorted to identify those with more than 50% in medium and high conservation priority areas. The list was further reduced to prioritize conservation areas with the highest rankings. Parcels and all preserved open lands within 200 feet of each, again, were clustered, similar to the other process, and clipped to the Highlands boundary. A higher priority was given to 200 acres contiguous land. And I know on your slide here it says lower priority, 200 acres outside contiguous. I took it off the actual PowerPoint on the screen behind you because it wasn't clear what that meant. It just those parcels that fall outside of the 200 acres of contiguous land were a lower priority for us, but sort of implicit in what I left up there, and it's clearer.
You know, this phrase came up before. What does clip to the Highlands boundary mean?
To fall into the Highlands boundary, not those that go outside
the
boundary.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Total conservation priority parcels was 2,021 parcels, or 91,884 acres. And this is where I get to trying to... Now you've got 91,000 acres here, and whatever was on the other, out of 860,000 acres, of which much is already preserved. What we then did was looked at superclusters, because we want this in a prioritized fashion as well. Superclusters are formed by merging your higher priority conservation clusters with the ag clusters within 200 feet of each other. And those greater than 150 acres were considered for inclusion in what we call our superclusters. And the breakdown of superclusters is 1,674 conservation parcels consisting of 82,355 acres and 944 ag parcels consisting of 64,715 acres. So the supercluster grand total is 2,638 parcels, which is 147,070 acres.
Not in addition to the 98 and 60.
No, not in addition to.
Not in addition. Subset.
The next steps, obviously considering what the council has said today, and we want to investigate whether there are nodes that need to be included in contiguous greenways, and this will pick up some of those pieces that you're speaking about. But again, this is important from a resource protection standpoint to make sure we capture what would, in effect, be greenways, which are protective of the resources, also protective of agricultural practices. And the environmental resource reasons for protecting those parcels is better protected when you have those greenways in place. The final list will be split into preservation and planning area parcels and by conservation and agriculture to prepare those confidential lists for the Green Acres and SADC Farmland Preservation Programme. However, we can, in accordance with what Kurt said, is still keep ag parcels that have that conservation priority, that we'd flip them over, keep them on the ag list.
Or identify that they're on both lists.
Yes, identify that they're on both. I think it's wise to identify that they're on both lists.
Yeah, so,
because you don't want a situation where one side doesn't know that the other side is, that they can work together.
I do have a question about the confidentiality. It's fine that Green Acres and the SADC get these lists, but I don't know what that means. I mean, they have the names, but it's not necessarily the SADC that goes out and preserves farms, or Green Acres goes out and acquires property. They facilitate the funding, and it's usually brought forth either by the applicant themselves or some other organization. So how do you, now that you've got this priority that you can't tell anybody about, how do we encourage that preservation if only the funding source is known?
Well, one of the things we'd be doing through the conformance process is when we meet with the communities is letting every single community know and to spread this to in an educational way, to spread it to all the residents that this was a mandatory component of the Act, that we've met that mandatory component, and therefore those landowners that want to pursue these programs know that there's a list and a prioritized list with SADC and Green Acres, and they can approach those agencies.
But they can't find out what's on that list.
They can find out if they are on.
If they apply and they go in and they meet, then SADC and Green Acres may not say it's on a particular list, but they can start a process whereby they can start the process of an application.
So they could conceivably release that information, is what you're saying?
I think on a parcel by parcel, I think when they're working with a town or a community, they can recognize it's on a parcel, which gives it a priority for consideration, but they don't have to share this is on a confidential list from the...
I think a lot of the work would come from the council staff keeping up with Green Acres and SADC to make sure the decisions made in those agencies were taking into account the priority.
But you may not, I mean, the people that actually own the property may have no idea that they stand a better chance of preservation, or a particular group who is going out and trying to conserve a land may say, well, gee, this is the low-hanging fruit. Let's go out and preserve these properties because the funding base is probably there, mm-hmm. rather than spending time elsewhere. So if the process is they could release it, like we have a planning incentive grant, Chester Township, and many towns do. I mean, would our, planning incentive grant tap into, with the SADC, that information so that we could rank them? Somehow this process has to have an end game. And by just giving the funding source the information, doesn't do much.
Well, we do our part, and our part is the requirement to give it to SADC and Green Acres. I think that we can continue to do the work here, and we will monitor preservation as it moves forward and continue to work with Green Acres and SADC to see that they are taking into consideration this. But I think further to that, we can also let the SADC will work with CADBs, because they've got a program that they have a requirement that's before these different county ag boards on what is required. That'll be part of their ongoing work.
Do you have an answer to your question? I mean, is there?
I would think that if we could get the SADC to go to the CADBs, where Great Acres go out to the acquiring sources and reveal that information, it would be fine. I don't have to reveal everybody or what their priority is, just that they are in a priority. I don't know if we can legally ask them to do that.
Monique Purcell is here from SADC.
Actually, I'm not from SADC.
I'm sorry to come here.
What I'm thinking is this might be a way to merge these priority lists. This is a first cut. But we can then look at how this list compares to the county comprehensive plans that they're all preparing, all the counties are preparing now,
right,
as well as more specifically to municipal pigs. So that can be the interface, I think, that we could.
So the data would flow back.
Right.
So
that's
all right. Thank you. Yeah.
Kurt?
Yeah,
okay, thank you.
Integrating this thing.
I think we had a very preliminary discussion about what confidential means. Does it mean the council's reviewing the list? Does it mean only the staff members are reviewing the list? So can we make sure that we're all in agreement on what confidential
means? What we said before was the staff was that it was staff.
So
council members would not know what's
okay,
on
the list. Okay, so I'm clear then. So we're going to take this confidential list, and with all due respect to the staff, that only the bureaucrats will know, and they're going to share it with the bureaucrats down at the SADC and the Green Acres. Then all those bureaucrats are going to go out to the CADBs, to those bureaucrats, and then at some point they're going to go to the mayors and the town councils and everybody, and real people are going to know about it. So here we are at the top, charged with making sure that everything makes sense, and we're not going to know, but everybody else is going to know. I have a real struggle with that. I mean, we're here to make sure that things make sense. We're the ones that are called to task when something doesn't make sense, and that doesn't mean the staff can't do a tremendous job assembling this list. But it makes no sense to me that we don't know what's on this list when everybody else is going to know.
Well, one of the problems is that how do
we go into closed session and we review the list.
Right, but then those of us who are landowners, local elected officials, whatever we all are, how do we not have a conflict having that information?
Well, we're all going to be recusing ourselves when the thing goes full circle anyway, right? If we're sitting on the CADBs, if we're out of town council, we're all going to be recusing ourselves. So there's a point where the pavement hits the rubber hits the pavement, where we all end up recusing ourselves out of the actions. But it seems to me, if we're charged with making a list, we should more than understanding how we're going to set the parameters for the list, we should see how the parameters worked. And did the parameters make sense? And the only way we can do that is to see the list.
I don't see why the council members need the list. I don't know what that information, what were we going to do with it? I mean, in fact, the funding agencies, the acquiring agencies, organizations are the ones that need this list. The council members, I mean, why do we need to know that specific confidential information? What are we going to do with it?
I think the first step would be to have the list shared with the SADC and Green Acres, right? They have to take the first, then the comparison has to take place to make sure the list, in fact, does make sense across agencies, right? That needs to be the starting point. And then how involved the council gets with, you know, each specific person on that list, I'm not sure how significant that is, because this is really something that's charged back to the SADC and Green Acres to establish priorities in cooperation with the Highlands.
But I think Kurt's asking sort of a prior question in the process, which is that this is an unusual. I mean, in most areas we rely on the staff and then we make a decision based on what they're telling us. In this case, we're fully relying on the staff.
No, but we're not. We're looking at this mechanism.
Right.
And what we're talking about is the process and the mechanism that we will then yield a list of properties. We're not voting on what properties to purchase.
No, I agree with you, but I'm just saying.
I disagree. I think that we need to see. You need to see the results. You develop plans for a house with an architect, and then you approve them, and you hire a contractor, and you build the house. You don't turn a blind eye to the house and never look at the finished product to see if it meets what you wanted. You watch it as it's being constructed. You see if there's things that need to change. What you put in the plans. you find that something doesn't quite make sense, and you got to alter it a little bit to get to the desired end goal. And I think that's the case here. We can sit down and say that all this makes sense right now, but when we see the results of the study, and I'm not talking person by person, right, but I'm seeing when we apply to the maps, and we say, well, wait a minute, why did this get missed? You know, this area here really should have been included. You know, we have the local knowledge. We know what's happening, and that's why we're all here and assembled with the cube that the governor called us. That's what we're here for, and I just can't see how it makes sense for us to make a significant list like this and at some point not have a review process to make sure that it makes sense, that we all can say there's nothing in there that doesn't connect. Because we'll be the first ones criticized when somebody gets this list, and at some point somebody will have the list, because it'll get out, and we'll be criticized if it doesn't make sense. Just like the red and green map that the DEP put out several years ago. You know, that was a disaster. That's what we're here for, to make sure we don't have disasters.
But again, I just think that's the next step. I think sharing the list now with the agencies and making sure it does make sense is what has to happen next. This just lays out the first step of how the analysis was done, first run through. Okay, now let's compare it and make sure that what's flushing out makes sense in terms of local priorities, county priorities, and state priorities.
And Highlands priorities.
And Highlands, of course. Yeah. Well, that's how you kind of establish it based on your work. So now it's a matter of comparing it back.
And I concur with that, but at the end run, I think there should be some final review that we do, that we put our stamp of approval, you know, Highlands Council approved.
Are you suggesting that in this, because I'm just trying to get to what you wanted here, Kurt, that you would look at sort of a GIS-based map of this? Because my concern is, if you sit down with block and lot level information on a list type format, it is human nature that everybody goes directly to around them, their homes, the people they know. So you say it gets to that level. We don't look at it from that perspective. So if you're talking about looking at a map that sort of takes in areas, because for example, we've done a comparison, we've looked at ADAs and looked at this. I got that this morning from the staff looking at one particular county. We've looked at that from that perspective. I will honestly tell you, I believe that, you know, the reason for the confidentiality, when you get down to block and lot level, is you said it will get out. And I just think it's going to be very difficult for you to sit down and look at the blocks and lots around you and the knowledge you have. And there's particular different interest levels here. So what exactly is it that you say that you would like to see? Is it?
I would think that we should be presented with overlays, right? Just as we have overlays for all these different things that we're measuring. We should have an agriculture overlay.
Good.
We should have a conservation overlay.
Yeah. So you're looking at the GIS results, not at a block and lot level list.
I'm not suggesting a block and lot list. I can't say that I've sat here and thought it 100% through. So don't quote me. But it seems to me we should be able to look at some overlays and be able to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, why was this portion of the conservation zone not included as a priority area? And there may be some reasons, and maybe it's that we need to tweak the model a little bit. And I think that's what we're here to do. That's my sense.
You're saying you can do that. I don't know how you can do that, because I mean that does get us all involved in looking at every.
Well, I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just honestly, but I don't know that you want to know what.
I think we don't. I mean,
why exactly is it confidential? I mean, maybe this is obvious of a question, but it is going to get out.
If you knew that you were a high priority property for acquisition, would the price go down?
No, that's what I want to make sure we discuss that. Yeah. That's what we're talking about. It's going to affect the prices of the landowners too.
Right.
But I
don't think it's a given that this will get out. I mean, because I think, you know, the state keeps confidential lists. You know, all these programs of the land, their priority lists, and they're not.
So, but that's really the issue, that the landowner doesn't realize they're on a list because it's going to affect the market price.
Right.
But the other aspect is that we don't know it because of conflicts. I mean, I just want to understand that.
So I guess what we discussed, the last time we discussed this, was that we wouldn't know it both for two reasons. One, because the notion of the 14 or 15 of us
going over the entire Highlands region to decide whether one property ought to be higher than another property was a little unwieldy, and the conflicts of all of us in our various roles, having that information seemed like it both presented a conflict and it increases the opportunity that information will become public.
To eliminate the lobbying aspect of trying
yes, that too.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, imagine the process of us having this discussion on all the properties and having public comment on which properties we included and we didn't include before we voted on that list.
Right.
Well, I think if you have a high connect between the SADC and Green Acres and the staff work here, that you're pretty well assured that they've done their job. My concern's always been, you look at the whatever county data you have, and if it boots up pretty well, then you're okay. And if it doesn't, then you got to go back to the drawing board. Now, I feel pretty confident that staff will tell us that. We did the run and it didn't work. We need to do something else. Or, gee, we came up and we had an 85% hit rate. And if they come up with that, I'm happy to vote. But if it's less than that, so I don't know that I want all the granular detail of whose property is what, but I would sure like to know that there's a high hit rate.
The only thing I'd say is, maybe it's my ultra-conservatism that caused me to say this, but, you know, Big Brother, you know, at what point does Big Brother have to be watched by the little people still? And we sat here at one time at a natural resources meeting, and we were subjected to a map of potential archaeological areas, but it was top secret. So somewhere, somebody down at the seventh floor of the DEP knows where these sites are, but nobody else can know. God only knows what happens if this person dies. And all we can know is that each of these little boxes that was, I think, a quarter of an acre in each direction, somewhere in that little box was some top-secret archaeological possibility that was reported to the DEP. And we had to take this into consideration, one of the levels of mapping that we developed eons ago. And I said, well, so are we led to believe that they're going to put the box with the archaeological site in the corner? Or is it going to be right in the middle? I mean, it was almost pathetic. And I thought, you know, this, you know, when does the government become more important than the people? And I think that we're here to be the checks and balances for government. That's why we're here as individual citizens. We don't get paid. We're here for all the interactions we have with people and the knowledge we have on the ground to make sure that our work makes sense. And we're all in conflict anyway. I mean, when it comes time to for any of our other activities outside of here, if we're going to be in conflict. I mean, so we're not protecting ourselves from anything because we'll be in conflict anyway. We're going to be recusing ourselves. And so I'm very troubled being on this council with the confidential list leaving this council and us not at some point having the opportunity to say yes or no. And that's, I won't belabor it any more than that. But it troubles me.
I don't know what I would do with the list, but I'd be happy to agree to let Kurt look at it. I see your point. I don't know practically how we deal with it. If you want to look at it, I think it could remain. I would trust that he keep a confidence. And he could maybe you sit down with the staff and review what comes out and see if it makes sense.
You can't look at your own farm, though, Kurt.
Right. We're preserved.
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a good idea that certain things remain confidential. And I think there's a reason for the archaeology, because people go and dig up and steal archaeological artifacts. And there's a reason that threatened endangered species, because bald eagles get killed by developers. I mean, this is our... Whoever. hunters that are wanting to have another trophy for their wall. At any rate, I think that we have to ask ourselves reasonably who and whose hands is this information going to be most useful. And I think Bill has really hit it on the nail on the head by saying we need to have a process once this first step if we approve this process here and the list is gone down to the SADC, we have to have a process then to make sure that information feeds back so good purchases are made. And I think as long as we set all that up and have confidence that that process is working, we don't need to look at the specific information. We're only going to get ourselves into trouble that way. And, you know, the access is supposed to be confidential, not necessarily confidential from us, but it is supposed to be confidential. And I think we should honor that, as we don't all need to know every little thing about everything. Some things are better left unknown.
All right. Well, Kurt said you might belabor this. In my sense is there is not a majority of the council that agreed that would like to get involved in this. I don't know.
I just want to ask one last question. Since the time the act was passed, I mean, has Green Acres been continuing to buy up and also have other farms been putting in conservation?
Yes.
So this has been an ongoing process?
Correct.
And it will continue to be?
Yes.
And is this generally initiated by, like, a property owner? I know towns have been...
That depends entirely on the municipality and the county. And it can be, some towns are very aggressive. They've got a CADB liaison who goes out. So you've got actually a town person, a county person, and a state person pushing. All of those entities are all involved. It depends entirely on each municipality who's more aggressive and how many are involved in pushing it. Towns have pigs. Oh, the planning center has programs. And it's the same with Green Acres, the exact same. And then you've got the land trusts. They also have focus on it. So there's no one approach, but they're all out there doing this work.
So a property owner who realizes that nobody from Green Acres has come knocking on his door to buy the land, I guess assumes that he's not a priority, but he can still apply and make his case.
He can apply, go online to apply, he can walk down, he can go to the office to apply, he can, and same with farm preservation. If the farmers can go to their local person, to their county, to the CAD, or directly to the state. So, and there are cases where they're approached as well. But yeah, there's a myriad of different ways you can do it. But the landowner themselves can make the direct application. They do not have to wait to be seen. And in the case of one of the counties we were looking at, that becomes the priority. I believe it was Huntington County. If the applicant comes in and is a willing landowner, then immediately it's going to be assessed and evaluated. The county ad board will make a final decision. That person can also go to the state and they can do it at the same time, and you can actually have different results, because I've seen that happen. Also, there was $30 million set aside with the Department of Ag with SADC for Highlands farms, and that was that a farm could go through the normal process, and if it wasn't captured, it had a safety net in those dollars as well. That's the kind of thing we'll be advocating moving forward.
What do you mean the normal process?
So in other words, if they go into the normal process, and let's just say that they don't make it through, because when they go through the criteria and are marked and they're ranked, they didn't make it up to the high criteria, because possibly, and it's a thing that would happen in the Highlands, is the soils might not be equivalent to other areas. So the Highlands money then, when the SADC would say, well, they didn't make the ranking, but they go into the Highlands. So they've nearly got a safety net to capture them, and we'd like to see more of that.
So it's really a lousy farm, but it's in the Highlands, so they'll get their money.
And this gets to you, to the quality of the farmer. You a good farmer.
I promise to stifle, but there's still very productive soils up here, but the existence of rocks and topography take away from some of the characteristics that prime ag soils possess in other regions of the state. And all those beautiful warehouses along the turnpike, those were the best soils in the state. And now they're warehouses.
The other thing here is, Mimi, we value, and this is a conversation we've had with the SADC, we recognize their priorities. We have a separate set of priorities that are resource-based. So those very rocky, hilly farms that have streams going through them or are headwaters for some of our waters, they're of importance to us for a separate set of reasons. So it's when you put those two sets together that you have the Highlands priorities.
And if they grow strawberries, wow.
Well, and the ground up here is very well suited for tree fruit. You know, just because it's not as suited for row crops doesn't mean that it's not well suited for a lot of other crops. At some point, you've got to have distinguishing characteristics.
So you were going through the next steps.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did the first two. The last one is consistent with the Highlands Act, and this is the last step that we have to do with the conservation priority list. We are required by the Act to look at parcels that nearly qualify for the Highlands Act third exemption, but lack the state permits, so they may be considered for priority preservation consideration. That's something we're going to need DEP to give us, because they have the information on applications they received that were denied, so that we can, and we would add those to the list, but we would then look as well at the resource value and rank them accordingly. But again, it's a requirement of the Act that we do this.
Applicants have that information themselves, right?
They absolutely do, but I know that because I work at the DEP group that are here in this in these offices, and they have that information. In fact, I got a preliminary list from them of people that applied for that third exemption and were denied for whatever reason.
So they have to have actively applied for that exemption to
be rejected?
That's the starting point. Yeah. Yeah. The best data we have.
And then finally, there's just the this shows you the cluster parcels, the super cluster parcels. There's a table. It's all in your hands as well. That looks at the agricultural priority acreage, conservation priority acreage, the total acreage, priority parcels, and goes through then to the super clusters and gives you your grand totals.
I'd only put to the last page, would have had my answer to the previous question.
Maybe if I'd gone quicker.
Other comments or questions on this?
I think the staff needs to be commended on this. This is an enormous amount of preliminary work, and I think it's extremely well done. I mean, we have some questions, which is natural. You really deserve a lot of credit, everybody on the staff who worked with us.
Second
time. The bottom up.
Okay. So the next thing on, I don't think there are any committee reports. We have a resolution to agree to have 11 meetings between now and July 17th.
Plus a conference call.
Plus a conference call the week later. So the resolution is in your packets, and the only thing that will be added is between July 17th, after July 17th, so on July 24th, I guess at 10 o'clock, we'd have a meeting by conference call. With the only agenda item being to confirm the minutes, presuming we had adhered to the schedule we're now agreeing to. Is there a motion to...
I'll move it. Second.
Any discussion?
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. This is a highly controversial resolution. Since you always take attendance in alphabetical order or votes in alphabetical order, I'd like to ask that you go in reverse order today, because I would hate to set the trend for this resolution.
Okay. Would you like to say why it's controversial?
It was a lighthearted attempt. I'm saying is I have to be the first one.
I know. You always are. Okay. All right.
Okay, Hillary.
Just so I'm clear, we're voting on a scheduled meeting resolution.
We are. Well, it's not always near the end of the alphabet. All right. Well, I think we could do it. We don't even need a roll call.
No.
No. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. The next item, unless the council members have other items, is public comments. Are there any public comments? You.
First.
You raised your hand first.
Oh, yes. Somebody behind me. Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Many people recently have been spending an inordinate amount of time commenting on the COA, proposed COA rules, and you have too, and thank you very much for the copy of your comments that you handed out today. I just want to bring something to your attention, because I think it is very important. This is an unlikely source, perhaps, to rely upon, but Hill Wallach, a law firm that prides itself on serving the development industry, has provided, through their website, a list of the number of the total affordable housing obligation for every community in the state. And I just want to highlight a couple from this, one from Morris County. According to this list, Parsippany will be required to zone to allow a total affordable housing obligation of 2,578 units of affordable housing. This is before you add in the multiplier, which means that we have got well over 10,000 new units being added to Parsippany. As another example of this list, in Passaic County, West Milford, which is one of the only the five communities that is wholly in the preservation area, would have to add an additional 290 affordable housing units, and Ringwood, also entirely in the preservation area, would have to add 121. These numbers were developed partly using something called a vacant land analysis. And the vacant land analysis was put together by the National Center for Neighborhood and Brownfields Redevelopment at the Blaustein School. And in there, they state that in an effort to take all of these variables into proper consideration, the center utilized the following resources in developing its analysis of vacant land and the capacity of that land to support future growth. And one of the three things that is cited is the Highlands. It goes on to say the center worked closely with each organization, including the Highlands Council, to calculate vacant land and development capacity in a manner that was consistent with their land use rules and regulations. It goes on further to say the center used residential densities consistent with, it lists everything, including the Highlands Preservation Area, to support future growth. There's a disconnect here.
You bet.
A major disconnect.
You bet.
And if they are misstating the fact that they have worked with the Highlands Council, I think the Highlands Council, I appreciate these comments that you have prepared, but it needs to be said much more strongly than is said in here. I recognize you very politely talk about the need to coordinate all planning with COA rules and protect the environment, but you need to state that that the Center for Neighborhood and Brownfields Redevelopment did not work with the Highlands Council and did not get this data from the Highlands Council, because this just makes this is one of the biggest problems that everybody has with the proposed COA rules. It just makes a mockery of the Highlands Council and the work that you were doing. And then my last question is, you have been referring today to a memo that was handed out when we went through all the, and is that available to the public?
Right. It's still a deliberative document.
I suspect you'd say that. Thank you.
Which memo was that on?
It's we did a PowerPoint of all the issues. The memo that's still in development has some details that's still draft and under deliberation.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment, and I said it before. I think we have to be very careful in using Mark IV data to make decisions.
We certainly have done presentations.
Because towns don't always go in and update it, and they don't call something vacant, or they call something vacant that has been preserved or used for education purposes or whatever, so it's not vacant.
Welcome.
Hi, I'm Catherine Adifluci. I'm the planning administrator for Mount Olive. Mayor Scapicchio was here earlier, but he had to leave, and he asked me to read this into the record. I'm here today to provide the council with some factual information on a parcel of land within the foreign trade zone that is in a planning area of the Highlands, but now falls within a protection zone. Lot 4 in Tax Block 301 is a 57-acre tract of land which was incorporated into the foreign trade zone in 1989 for a payment of $5 million to the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection's Green Acres Program. Lot 4 received preliminary site plan approval from the Township's Planning Board to develop 700,000 square feet of office space, which was memorialized in Planning Board's resolution of November 8, 1990. This approval was granted an extension by the Planning Board on November 14, 2002, for a period of 10 years through November 8, 2010. At the time of the sale, an agreement was executed whereby Green Acres would have, at the time of sale, the first option to acquire that 57 acres for $5 million. The agreement also required the return of 67 acres of land to the owner of the foreign trade zone, which now protects the Musconetcong River. In compliance with this agreement, the current owner, BASF, contacted Green Acres in 2004 to offer the sale of the property back to Green Acres. However, Green Acres had used the funds generated by the sale of the 57-acre tract to purchase other lands. In addition, the Manalapan Township Council was concerned with the loss of an essential commercial ratable and adopted a resolution on May 24, 2005 that recommended that Green Acres buy other space in the preservation area and that the Musconetcong River Corridor be protected to its fullest extent by continuing ownership of the 67 acres buffering the river. We hope that you will consider this information and update the land use capability map to classify this property as existing community. I have a copy of the letter if you'd like.
Okay, great. Thank you.
My name is David Shope. I have a farm in Lebanon Township. I was interested in the discussion on land acquisition, and speaking as a landowner in the preservation area, there's really only one buyer, and the buyer's broke. So when you talk about confidentiality in terms of putting the price up, we'll be lucky to get anything at all. And you know it. A friend of mine who has a 100-acre farm in Morris County has attempted to enter the Green Acres program from essentially its inception. He filed year after year after year after year. And whenever he ran into Frank Pinto, he'd say, "How am I doing?" And Frank would say, "You're on file, you're on file, you're on file." Finally, Frank said, "Don't file anymore because you're on file. You don't have to do it every year." He is 76 years old. He still has his 100-acre farm. He's had a couple of offers over the years before the Highlands Act has come along. Needless to say, since the Highlands Act first reared its ugly head, he's had no offers. Nor has Frank Pinto contacted him and said, "We're now ready to talk." He still has his 100-acre farm, and he has no place to go with it. And unfortunately, this is typical. There's a lot of people, and when you look at the demographics of farmers, and this information is contained in the USDA report of 2002, the latest, you'll find that the average age of farmers in New Jersey at that time was 56 and going up. So that's the situation. We have people that have land, particularly in the preservation area, and no one to sell it to, not even the state. So the idea of having, and the reason I'm bringing this up is I think the list should be public. So that, for instance, this fellow, because of exemption number one, he could put an additional house on it. And if this should be his only option, he should know it today. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
Ellen Heinrich, the end of another marathon session. First of all, I hope it's an easy question. We were told there would be a public workshop on TDR. And what has happened to that? You said no more committee meetings. And
except TDR, that was what I said.
No. You did? Okay, I guess I missed that.
So there will be meeting, and that will be public.
Okay, great. It's very bad we needed. Now, the process for putting these lists together is really raises some questions. Was NJDA and the SADC involved in actively in putting this together lately?
As you know, this is not a session for asking questions, so okay. Like your comments. And if you think there are issues we left out of that list, you should let us know.
I think the discussion shows that there's probably a lot more need to sit down with the SADC and Monique, or the NJDA. Monique saw this for the first time today, as we all did. There's a question of how is the list going to be used? It's going to be confidential, but does that mean that this list gets into play when the wastewater management plans are in here for consideration? Is it still confidential? Is the whole program going to be based on willing sellers? And if so, it's got to be appealing to willing sellers. And not maybe everybody is so desperate for money, they won't care what they have to do to get their land preserved. But I believe that farmers who really want to productively, profitably farm in the Highlands in the future are going to have to look pretty carefully at what the conditions are. And it's beginning to look like there's going to be a blending on my property of natural resource conditions and agricultural conditions. And this is something we've, and our members have raised questions about for a very long time, because if the natural resource restrictions are going to be part of the TDR deed or the farmland preservation deed, they never have been before. And farmers are will say that either don't do that, just the deed restricts development, or we should get extra TDR credits or extra money for being denied the use of that property. And I guess I'm going to have to hurry up and get my deed study to you, because I've looked at deeds and TDR programs around the country, and they either have nothing in them at all about natural resource conditions, or if they do, they figured out a way to look at them as though they had some development value, and so they could give them extra TDR credits. And then the last thing is, I think in the plan, and I don't have the language, the forest woodlands are handled differently in agricultural ADAs, I believe, from the forest preservation area. There's a section in there that I think says those landowners are encouraged to do forest management plans, they're not required to, and so forth. And so in figuring out how to deal with these parcels that have both agriculture and forestry, that kind of language has got to be coordinated too. But we'll take a look at this and perhaps get back to you.
Thank you.
Hi, Wilma Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I guess I have a couple points. Just following up on what Julia was mentioning about the COA aspect, I just wanted to note, I know I did send our comments to Eileen and Tom, and I did not put it this way in the comments, but I was appalled that basically the COA rule did not even acknowledge the existence of the Highlands Regional Master Plan. It mentioned the council, and it talked about the rules of the council, but then they referred to the DEP rules as though that were the only mechanism by which the Highlands Council would have any control over the Highlands. It did not mention the regional plan at all, which I think is absolutely appalling. Because it did mention other regional plans. It mentioned the Pinelands Plan, it mentioned the Meadowlands Plan, it mentioned CAFR planning. So I'm hoping that this will be rectified over the next few months. Now, as to the things that have been discussed today, I have a question and a comment about the technical reports. It was my understanding that the technical reports were not part of the RMP that had the comment deadline that just recently passed.
but the technical reports are being revised, and number one, the technical advisory committees that originally had some input to those reports haven't met since 2006, I believe. It seems to me that there needs to be some kind of, that there needs to be an opportunity for the public to provide further comments on the technical reports, and whether there's a specific deadline for that, or you know, whether it's June or whether it's just as soon. It just seems to me that, you know, the technical reports are not, they're not, it's not like they're like finalized. They're still being worked on, and it seems like there ought to be some way of allowing for public comment, including members of the technical advisory committees, not necessarily meeting as a group, but at least you know, they're being presented with the reports as they currently exist, and you know, being allowed to provide comments on that. In addition, there's a lot of new information, or it's not really information, it's refinements. It's in a, to a large extent, it seems to be a lot of the things that people asked to have happen in their, you know, that was, that were part of our comments or people's comments on the RMP. But as more specifics come out, it seems as though there again that it would be good if we could have some input into these specifics, because you know, and refinements, and in some cases there are additions, but it's sort of like a constantly moving target, and you know, we'd like to be able to put our oar in on the refinements that are coming around. And I must say that the list of things that was presented today, I think there's a lot of very good work going on right now in refining the RMP. So I don't know, like, whether you can answer, whether there would be some additional.
We won't answer now.
You won't answer now, but later. Okay.
Thank you.
And as many things as can go up on the website or be available in electronic format, the better. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Monique Purcell, Jersey Department of Agriculture. Just a couple things. First, I wanted to thank the council for following up on the impacts of the department's elimination on the regional master planning process. Appreciate that. Second, I guess it's kind of similar to what Wilma's request was, is obviously the schedule is pretty ambitious between now and July 17th, and I was hoping that before the issues are discussed at the council meeting, that that information is actually released a week or so prior, kind of similar to the last time. I hate to ask for that because I know it's a lot of work, but it's very helpful to have that in advance to be able to prepare for the meeting discussion. In terms of the priority document, we'll definitely go back and take a look at that. Since the basis of the SADC priorities were considered, I'm assuming that these things will line up, but we'll make sure that that does happen. To Kurt's comment about the forest area and the ag area, I think it is a good idea to put those on both lists, and I think it'll also call out the need for a forest management program, a forest legacy type program in the state, which is actually identified in the RMP. And finally, I do, again, share Kurt's concern with the 25-acre threshold, and I think maybe we can think that through a little bit more, and maybe since we're going to actually take that list and separate it out, preservation and planning area, even though the list may get longer, I think, you know, having the highest priority in the preservation area obviously might be able to let us also include the smaller farms, less than 25 acres. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Sure. Andy Drysdale, Chestertown. Before I read my written comments, I'd just like to say that, you know, making lists that affect people's property values and then keeping them secret, I think, is not a good thing. It should either be made public or not made at all. First, We had a governor who signed the Highlands Act into law. This was a huge power grab that adversely affected many farmers. Now we have a governor who wants to eliminate the Department of Agriculture in a state proudly known as the Garden State. This is nothing more than another power grab, or perhaps a lever to force us to support his previous plan. There is no doubt that there needs to be spending cuts, but merging one department into another, like the DEP, which is already too powerful, will likely save very little money and will remove much of the farmer's voice in state government. Municipalities, farmers, and all citizens need to be aware and stand up against the centralization of government power. Spending could be cut by the elimination of many of the departments which were recently created by the two previously described governors. The Highlands Act is just one of those that infringes on the rights of citizens and costs the taxpayers money. The Highlands Act, in its 372 pages, contained many pages of a sales pitch, much of which has been proved to be nothing but spin. It tries to make the case that property values will increase because of it. This has certainly proven to be false, as well as other allegations therein. If this misguided act were really just about water, it should have protected and improved water quality where it falls on the entire state, instead of punishing those in the so-called preservation area who have done the best job of preserving it in the past. The Highlands Council could help the people of New Jersey by supplying the information they have gathered to municipal governments and state governments and the State Department of Agriculture by refusing to approve a final master plan until the onerous restrictions are removed, including the theft and control of thousands of acres of unnecessary buffers by the oversized and out-of-control New Jersey DEP. Thank you.
You never raise your hand till the end, I've noticed.
Well, that's not true.
Okay.
Dave Pfeiffer with the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. One of the interesting issues that I've observed in watching the council's functioning is this distinction that Tom alluded to earlier today between your quasi-legislative role in developing a plan and your quasi-judicial role in reviewing applications. We've seen applicants come before the council basically operating in a quasi-legislative format. I think it would be well for you to investigate how you're going to handle your judicial, quasi-judicial role and perhaps take a look at the Pinelands Commission's behavior on that score. The wastewater management plans have been the sort of acid test of that, but your workload in that area is going to be increasing, and you're going to need to create some internal structures, policies, and hopefully rules about how those things are handled. To further some comment on the COA numbers that we've seen released, and going back and looking at their developable land analysis, you set up a very nice set of comments with COA on the regs, but I would suggest taking a really hard look at their developable land analysis and the methodologies that were used. Compared to the RMT, is the place that you need to begin in trying to get those numbers more in line with what we believe the capacity of the Highlands to be. As far as the issues for council discussion, it was a great presentation. It makes me tired just looking at all the black boxes on there. Anjek would like to make some suggestions about model ordinances. Better perhaps to call them sample ordinances than models. We've learned this the hard way with our own ordinance collection and dissemination process. We have a large library of ordinances, which you're more than welcome to pillage. The real interesting questions are related to driving for uniformity across the Highlands as opposed to allowing ordinances to capture the particular situations of each municipality. The issue that bothers us to some degree is that we've always been working under the impression that the RMP's requirements were minimum standards, and that if municipalities wanted to be more stringent, they could. So we need to preserve that representation in the model ordinance, and everyone that's shoved out the door, it has to say that on there. Not to say that we should allow them to just make up stuff, but they've got to have some clear reason for doing what they're doing. And then the question is, to what degree will the legal shield apply if these things are more stringent? That's the question we're getting a lot from towns. on the property search tool, I think you need to front that with a disclaimer about the accuracy of data when you run it down to a parcel level. We've got data of all sorts of different resolutions that are being used in the Highlands process, and it's quite possible that something may be there that's not shown, or something is shown that's not there. So you need a disclaimer on that. With regard to finalizing and amending and finalizing and ultimately releasing the technical reports, if we can have them on CD, that would be great. Front that then with a guide to the use of the technical reports so that folks can take a look at that 3 feet of paper that results and hopefully filter their way through to the problem they're working on. This is just a matter of accessibility and utility for municipalities. With regard to the plan endorsement build-out model, we would really like to see the methodology that's going to be used for the build-out model. That probably well to have that peer reviewed before you set off the result. One of the problems that we're seeing is that build-out models are being applied or requested all over the state in a whole variety of processes. And what we're seeing statewide is the battle of the network models. Everybody's got a different way of doing a build-out analysis. So your methodology has to be overt, and it has to be something that people can understand. Good luck with that. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
For our next meeting, can you just prepare a brief outline of this trade zone issue? I know it's come before us a few times and it's from several different directions, and I'd sure love to make sure we've got an understanding of it.
Yeah, and I had asked when we met with Mandala for a map of it, because we didn't actually have a map of the exact zone, and Catherine says she has that for me. So that will help us in understanding this, because we needed to capture where the boundaries are of that zone so that we can address this issue with you.
Great. Comments? Our next scheduled meeting is in 2 weeks at April 10th at 10 a.m. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Mm-hmm.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you all. Thank you.